Go, good morning.
Good morning.
No, I was just asking us to get ready for the meeting. No, on the quarter. Attention at current meeting. Thank you very much. Welcome everybody to the meeting. Minister, we in our work we agreed that we will have physical meetings, and in this physical meeting we will prioritize the essence of the agenda items, especially those that need us to be a little bit more in-depth in the discussions will be physical. And of course, if necessary, we try to have as many meetings as possible physically, because there is an outcry that we are now planning to want to not to be in Parliament. But I know that that decision contradicts with the time, the season that we are in. We know that this season is the season where we need to be more on the ground than in boardrooms. And I'm sure together we must work out the mechanism of avoiding contradictions thereon. We are all welcomed. We must, as the Portfolio Committee on Water and Sanitation, we should be worried about the state of where we are in the country, more especially in Tswane. Free State is joining in, and I know that the minister might give us a bit of a relief on the programs thereof. But with that not being given, we are in a crisis situation when 23 people die because of possible things that it might be related to ourselves. We should be worried a bit. But I know that there is a plan to circumvent further happenings of that nature. We hope that we will be in a position to deal with it properly. We are all welcome into the meeting. Can we observe a moment of silence for mediation and of prayer? In remembrance, of course, even of the 23 that we have lost in the process.
Is it mediation again, Chair?
Meditation.
And the speaker also.
I said moment of silence. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
I mean, I caught again in any mediation. If you need somebody to mediate. Item 3. The apologies.
Yes, Chairperson. There is an apology for DM Mahlobo and DM Tshabalala. They have other commitments to attend to. There is also an apology from members Ms. Mushala, Mr. Basson, and Mr. Henry. That is all.
And okay.
And Mr.
Yeah, she has a sick note, but end next week.
That is all, Chairperson.
And the normal conference is the apologies of Maslow and DM Tshabalala must be passed by the minister. Remember, they are here as deputy minister.
Okay.
If the minister does not know the apology, it's problematic. I hope he does confirm those apologies. Do you want the message to arrange your marriage? What is it? You are exchanging vowels and rings now. In front of the minister.
So we want the minister to be the witness.
Yes. Oh, okay. We are on item 4, which is briefing by the Department of Water and Sanitation on the progress report regarding the status of disciplinary hearings, including cases investigated by the Special Investigating Unit. Minister, I'm sure.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much, Honorable Members of the Committee. My greetings to the Department, led by the Chief Justice for the Groups. Just a few things on our side. Since the beginning of the year last year, it's 2022, when we started filling up most of the posts that were vacant in the department of senior level, DG, DGGs. From where I sit, we have seen better accountability in the department, which was in line with our view that when you don't have proper accounting officers in the department, especially at DG level, you only have an acting CFO, an acting human resource acting everywhere, you're acting people. The likelihood is that lines of accountability diminish and they become very weak. Because in that action is not something that is designed for a specific period. It could be anything from a year upwards and so on. We were bound to have a department that in time would resemble a police station in terms of the number of dockets that were there, coming from outside investigation bodies like SARS, like SIU, even Hawks, and so on. So after filling up the posts, you knew the lines of accountability are now very clear. And then we started investing on developing common understanding that we have to adhere to all the principles in terms of dealing with wrongdoing. Whoever is affected, we deal with wrongdoing. DG has to take that responsibility together with the DGs, relevant DGs. We started talking strongly that even when we talk about cases of ill discipline, we've got to say under which DDG are most cases come, so that we start to work with downwards to say which chief director, which director, and so on. And so we're seeing improvement, and we appreciate and welcome that improvement in terms of dealing with ill discipline. On the other hand, I must say that there has been some kind of culture, subculture, we call it subculture in the department, where even a clerk would take an opportunity and delve on matters of corruption and all of that. So because it means that it was a subculture that had been created. But we're dealing with that. Any new information that we get in any chief directorate, in any regional office, is followed and is dealt with. Now, we are here today to then report to you in detail in terms of for what's happening. The outside body that is helping us a lot is SIU. I will come back on the SIU on matters that has to do with Hamaskar later on. But internally, I must say that we were quite active. These matters are dealt with thoroughly and effectively. That includes disciplinary hearings, outcomes, even appeals. All of those matters are dealt with quite thoroughly. So I'm happy to hand over to DG to then and Tim to take us through all the details. I'll come back at 5. Thank you very much.
Dr. Phillips.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Minister, honourable members, good morning, and colleagues. Perhaps I should first just introduce the team that I'm with from the department. I'll just say the people's names and function, and then perhaps they can just raise their hands a bit. So on my right, far right there, is Intabisen Tonzagubi, who is our DDG for Corporate Services. And on my right is Joy Mapuka, who's the head of our parliamentary liaison in the DG's office. On my left is Impo Rachitisu, who's our head of legal services in the department. On his left is Conrad Grieve, who's the chief director for human resources. On his left is Daryl Holby, who's our director for labor relations. On Daryl's left is Michael Mokhatsi, who's our head of internal audit. And on his left is Franz Moachi, who's our chief financial officer.
In your department, do you allow people to work with injuries?
Can I just speak for DG? It's part of the package. it's something that you can cope with. Thank you.
So you can speak and walk and think.
Yeah.
It's a sign of our level of commitment to Jeff.
Okay.
So we were requested but to do a presentation to the committee on our progress with regard to the status of disciplinary hearings, including cases investigated by the SIU. And presentation has a section on the status of disciplinary cases in the department, the status of our forensic investigations that we do for our internal audit unit, the status of the special investigation unit cases, although, Chair, we've included that, but of course we need to be careful not to speak on behalf of the SIU.
Mm.
So we work closely with them, we obtain information from them, but we some of the information we're going to be presenting on the status of the SIU cases we've obtained from the SIU, but we might not be able to answer detailed questions on that because those might have to be addressed to the SIU itself. And then we've also included a section on the status of recovery with regard to support and criminal cases. Several years ago, the department was in a dire financial situation as a result of weak financial management. The department also had very high levels of irregular expenditure and a large number of corruption cases being undertaken by the investigations being undertaken by the SIU. Those factors put the financial sustainability of the water sector and water delivery at risk. For the last 2 years, we have been implementing a turnaround and financial recovery plan, which is focused on improving our financial and other administrative controls, improving our expenditure control, improving consequence management, improving billing revenue collection, and debt collection and creditor control with regard to our own revenue collection, which results in income into our water trading entity, and in terms of collaboration with law enforcement agencies. As a result of this turnaround in financial recovery plan, we can now say that the department's finances are in a sound position. Its financial management has greatly improved, and its levels of irregular expenditure have greatly reduced. We are managing all of our disciplinary cases related to financial misconduct. I'm having quarterly meetings with our relevant officials seated here today to track progress made on individual cases. I had a meeting recently with the officials on the 24th of April. And the purpose of that is just to monitor and make sure that there aren't any financial misconduct disciplinary cases which are just sitting, that they all are in process. The regulatory framework for discipline and consequence management in the public service is quite extensive. It is quite highly regulated. We have to go through prescribed processes in order to take disciplinary action against officials. Those processes do take time, but as far as I'm concerned, the important thing is that all of these cases should be in process. We must go through the proper processes, but there shouldn't be any cases which are sitting and not at one stage or another with the proper processes. We are also having monthly engagements with the SIU, which are led by our DDG for Corporate Services and Publishing. So if you look at our financial misconduct statistics, which are shown in this table between May 2018 and May 2023, we had 86 reported cases, and so a case might involve several officials. So there were 144 officials implicated in those 86 cases. 166 of those cases have been finalized to date, and 100 in which 116 officials were implicated, and there are 20 cases still pending in which 28 officials are implicated. And then in the bottom part of the table, it shows the nature of the alleged misconduct for the pending cases, for the 20 pending cases involving or implicating 28 officials, and it shows the kind of cases, which includes issues such as fraud and improper expenditure. So you can see in this first table, the second row in the table shows that of the 116, for the 66 cases which have been finalized, in which 116 officials were implicated, then in the next slide, which I've got up now, it takes forward those 116 cases, and it shows that they were finalized with 14 employees resigning before the disciplinary action could be concluded. 13 employees found not guilty, 3 employees retired before the disciplinary action could be concluded, and 86 were found guilty to disciplinary cases, with the sanctions in the table below, which includes 23 written warnings, 33 final written warnings, 19 suspensions without pay, and 8 dismissals. Chairperson, you will recall about a year ago, there was a Daily Maverick article in which it was alleged that the department and the minister were not ensuring that disciplinary action was taken in terms of financial misconduct cases. We did previously report to make a presentation to the committee on our response to that Daily Maverick article. The purpose of this slide is just to give an update in that regard. The Daily Maverick article implied that there were 63 financial misconduct cases which the department wasn't taking forward. To date, 56 of those 63 cases have been concluded, with 6 of them being finalized where the employees either resigned or retired. 6 cases were withdrawn due to a lack of evidence or where the representations by employees were sufficient to not pursue disciplinary action. 4 employees were found not guilty. 7 of the cases are pending, 3 of which have been concluded and outcomes are awaited, and 4 are pending the leading of further evidence. and 40 of them, the officials have been found guilty through disciplinary processes, and the sanctions are given in the table below, which again includes 7 dismissals, as well as numbers of people, of officials suspended without pay, final written warnings and written warnings. Turning to forensic investigations carried out by our internal audit unit. Between 2019-2020 financial year and the 2022-23 financial year, the department completed 181 forensic investigations. Of those 181 forensic investigations, 127 found the allegations were confirmed to be true, while 54 were unfounded. So just to explain, Chairperson, our internal audit unit can receive allegations from various sources, a wide range of sources. We have a policy in the department encouraging whistleblowers. So whistleblowers are free to report any allegations of financial misconduct to our internal audit unit, and they investigate all the allegations. They might also receive allegations from other sources as well, such as the Public Service Commission, the SIU, or any other sources. So as I indicated, 127 of those allegations were confirmed to be true, while 54 were found to be unfounded. 113 cases are currently under investigation, and we have a backlog of cases to investigate. And in order to deal with that backlog, we have brought in professional service providers to assist us with the backlog, forensic auditors, and we've also hired some contract staff to help us with the backlog. We think once we've finished with dealing with the backlog, we will then go back to a normal rate of cases to investigate, and those can be dealt with by our internal staff in our internal audit unit, and we will no longer need to hire service providers or contract staff. So in dealing with the backlog, we've outsourced 91 of the 113 cases currently under investigation, and those will be completed during the first and second quarters of this financial year. We will be further commencing investigations on the further 15-1 cases shortly, again using our outsourced forensic auditors and contract staff. Those cases which were finalized, for which the forensic investigations were finalized, were dealt with either by referring the results to our employee relations sections to take disciplinary action against the officials, or where the investigations indicated that criminal behavior had taken place, they were referred to the SAPs or the Hawks for criminal investigation, and where the investigation indicated that there's a possibility for recovering money, they were referred to our legal services for civil recovery. As I indicated in the previous slide, those cases referred to employee relations are all being monitored, and disciplinary processes have been implemented or in progress, and the sanctions include dismissals, demotion, suspension without pay, and written warning letters. During the period that I'm referring to, an amount of 996,883 rand was recovered through civil recovery processes, and a judgment of 27,510,000 rand was awarded in favour of the department. In addition to carrying out these investigations, we're also continuously trying to raise the awareness of our officials about fraud and corruption, and our internal audit unit conducted 93 awareness sessions during that period, where more than 2,400 officials were trained about anti-fraud and corruption measures. This slide, we have showed this slide to the committee before in previous meetings, but it just gives the amount of irregular expenditure which the department is incurring per financial year. And the purpose of showing this slide is just to show the evidence for the points that I made earlier, that several years ago we did have high levels of irregular expenditure, particularly around 2017-18, 2018 and 2019. But since then, with the internal controls that we've improved in the department, our levels of new irregular expenditure have reduced drastically. But we still have to deal with this irregular expenditure which is still on our books from that period several years ago, from the period from about 2015-16 through to 2018-19. Those high graphs on that table, we have to deal with all that irregular expenditure. It remains on our books until we've dealt with it. So part of our financial turnaround program is to process this old irregular expenditure. And there we have to go through a process of National Treasury where we have to show National Treasury that we've dealt with it in terms of, for example, taking disciplinary action against officials who did wrongdoing to result in the irregular expenditure. And then we have to apply to National Treasury for condemnation of the irregular expenditure. To date, we've submitted 9 cases to the value of 8.3 billion to National Treasury for condemnation. You can see the total amount of irregular expenditure that we have to deal with is approximately 16 billion. In addition to taking disciplinary action, we might have to refer some instances to the police for criminal processes. We need to do thorough investigations to find what were the causes of the irregular expenditure. And in that regard, 52 cases related to this irregular expenditure to a total value of 2 billion are with our internal audit for investigation. And I've covered their progress with regard to their audits and indicated how they have brought in additional capacity to deal with the current backlog of forensic audit investigations. So of those 52 cases, 42 have been outsourced to the panel of investigators. The CFO is currently looking at another 293 cases to a value of 5.6 billion. To determine whether they should also be referred to internal audit for investigation. With regard to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, our levels of fruitless and wasteful expenditure have also reduced due to the financial controls that we put in place. And again, internal audit involves investigating the causes of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. One of the causes of our fruitless and wasteful expenditure has been sitting time of our construction units. By that I mean that we've had instances in the past where our construction unit has not been as productive as it should have been, and its equipment and sometimes its staff have sat not working because they haven't had the necessary materials or supplies to do the work because of the challenges with our procurement processes. So one of the things that we're doing is the department is to improve our procurement processes, particularly related to the construction unit. We've put in place a new infrastructure procurement policy and infrastructure procurement strategy in line with National Treasury's framework for infrastructure procurement and delivery management, which we think is going to enable us to procure goods and services for the construction unit much more efficiently and effectively so that we deal with this problem of fruitless and wasteful expenditure caused by downtime of the construction unit. I've covered that we have put in place measures to deal with the backlog of investigations, and those are currently being implemented with the service providers and the contract workers in place. So we are on track to deal with that backlog. We've referred 28 cases to the police and the Hawks, 13 of which are under investigation, and 15 of which have been closed by the police and the Hawks for various reasons. We do make follow-ups with the police and Hawks investigating officers. One of our officials was arrested for fraud and has been dismissed. We have written letters to the police and to the Hawks requesting that these criminal investigations be expedited. Turning to the FIU cases, I'm sure the committee members will be familiar with this, but just to remind ourselves the process for FIU investigation. If you go to the FIU website, it says there that anybody, any whistleblower, can provide them with information. Once they get information from anyone, they assess it and they verify it as to whether there is indeed a case. If on the basis of their initial assessment, they determine that there might be a case to answer, they then motivate for a proclamation to the President. And the SIU powers become active once the President approves a proclamation. And then the SIU starts a full-scale investigation once the proclamation has been published. Based on their findings from their full-scale investigation, the SIU can take a number of steps. It sometimes institutes civil litigation in its own name. It sometimes refers evidence of criminality to the National Prosecuting Authority and to the Asset Forfeiture Unit. There's also an SIU Special Tribunal, which is a special court that has been set up to deal with the findings from SIU cases. And when they find that there's been misconduct by a government official, they make a referral to the relevant accounting officer. And they can also make referrals to various other bodies, which they do, where they find evidence of wrongdoing, such as the Institute of Directors, sometimes the Revenue Service, or various regulatory bodies, other regulatory bodies. So we have nine SIU investigations which are in progress in the department. And as I indicated earlier, these all relate to the period of when there was high irregular expenditure in the department. On the first one, and all of these are SIU investigations which have become full investigations after proclamations approved by the President. So the first one relates to the Mopani Water and Wastewater Emergency Intervention. The SIU made one disciplinary referral to DWS related to one of our DDGs. The DDG was charged but found not guilty, and we then took the matter for judicial review before the Labour Court. However, that's been overtaken by events because the same DDG was dismissed on other procurement-related charges last year. The SIU also made three disciplinary referrals to Lapeli Northern Water. Two of those officials resigned before they could be charged by Lapeli, and one was dismissed by Lapeli Northern Water last year. And the SIU has successfully restrained the dismissed official's pension. The SIU also issued summons for civil litigation in 2018 in the High Court. And the civil litigation was to set aside the contract to the value of $4.1 billion. The parties to the litigation are listed there. The matter was finally set down for hearing on the 19th of October 2022, but was postponed. We're still waiting for a new date to be set. For Proclamation 27 of 2018, which related to contracts awarded by DWS to SAP, the SIU made two disciplinary referrals to the DWS, one of which was for one of our DDGs. The DDG was charged and we had a disciplinary hearing. The DDG was found guilty and dismissed in November last year after being found guilty of misconduct. Subsequent thereto, the other official for whom we received the referral, who was the chairperson of the DBAC at the time, is currently in the process of disciplinary action. Now, as I indicated earlier, one of the other measures that the SIU can take is to take civil action to reclaim money. And as a result of the SIU legal action against SAP, The settlement was reached between the SIU, which resulted in 413 million rand being repaid to the department. And we've received all of that money. It's in our water trading entity account. That settlement was basically resulted in all the money being repaid to us that had been irregularly paid to Zach with regard to his contract. With regard to proclamation R27 of 2019, the raising of the Tanin Dam Oil project, the investigation is still ongoing by the SIU and we haven't received any referrals yet. With regard to proclamation number R28 of 2019, the emergency upgrading of the Tutela Footed Pro Transfer Scheme, the SIU has handed evidence against the former Acting Director General to the National Prosecuting Authority. The SIU has made 5 disciplinary referrals to DWS in respect of 5 BIT committee members, and the disciplinary proceedings are currently in process. And counsel for SIU has also drafted papers in preparation for a review application to be brought to the Special Tribunal seeking civil remedies to declare the contract unlawful, set it aside, and recover the losses suffered by the department. With regard to Proclamation R4 of 2019, which referred to various allegations of maladministration and corruption in Ongeni Water, the SIU has made a referral to the National Prosecuting Authority for fraud, corruption and money laundering against 61 individuals, and the dockets have been opened. The SIU has also made referrals to the Asset Forfeiture Unit in respect of 45 individuals and entities to recover the proceeds of crime. And the SIU also made 18 disciplinary referrals to Ongeni Water, which has briefed a team of attorneys and advocates to deal with the disciplinary matters and administrative action referrals. So they are now starting the processes of disciplinary action in Ongeni Water. The SIU is motivating for an extension to this proclamation as more allegations have been uncovered during the investigation. With regard to Proclamation R33 of 2021, with regard to 4 contracts awarded to EOH, this investigation is still underway. The SIU has informed us that it's currently conducting lifestyle audits on implicated DWS officials, although they haven't yet made disciplinary referrals to us. But as part of the investigation process, after engagement between the SIU and EOH, EOH and the SIU agreed that EOH must repay 192 million rand to the department over 36 months. And so far we've received 73 million of that 192 million. They are paying to the SIU and we do receive the money periodically from the SIU. With regard to Proclamation R82 of 2022, related to the performance of drought relief technology services and investigation services by Lepeli, Northern Water and Amatwala Water, the SIU has made 18 criminal referrals to the National Prosecuting Authority, 2 disciplinary referrals to Amatwala Water, and the SIU investigations are still ongoing. With regard to Proclamation 96 of 2022, which related to repairs to pump stations at Grootfontein and other work at Grootfontein. That's a recent one which has just started. I signed a letter of engagement on the 31st of March, but we haven't yet received any referrals from the SIU. There are some new allegations which the SIU has indicated that it has received. The SIU has assessed these allegations and come to the view that they are worthy of requesting the President to issue proclamations, and they are waiting for the President to issue proclamations, and those relate to the War Leaks Program, the Dropper Bot Program, and various allegations related to Sedi Ben Water Board. The status of recovery in terms of civil and criminal cases, I'd like to hand over to our Chief Director for Legal Services to take up through these cases because he's very familiar with them.
Thank you very much, DG. As the DG has already indicated, once internal audit has actually investigated, there are matters that are referred to legal services for recovery. So I'm going to talk to some of those matters in a brief format, considering that some of them are still pending before various courts. The first matter would be the matter, the department matter school in there. This is the matter where the department instituted a civil action against Fumile. Fumile was appointed by the department to prepare an annual financial statement. However, they did not necessarily submit that annual financial statement within the prescribed time. But they ended up being paid 70 million. Upon investigation by internal audit, it was found that that appointment was also in contravention of Section 47 of the Constitution. And as a result, legal services was instructed to institute civil claims against Fumile and the officials who were involved. Fumile filed a counterclaim, and their view is that they have done work, and that in itself resulted in the delay in terms of the prosecution of that particular matter. At the time when we were preparing the presentation, we did not have a court date, but I can confirm to the committee now that we have since been provided with the date. The matter is set down on the 5th of February 2023 for 2 weeks. The second matter, I think the DG has already spoken to, is the matter by the department versus metric. This is a classical example of one of the matters where we institute civil claims and then we become successful. The DG has already indicated that there was a claim, a legal action where we recovered around 27 million. So this is the case. This matter is now currently sitting at the Supreme Court of Appeal. They have appealed to the Supreme Court of Appeal. However, their appeal was not successful, but they are trying other means to resign that particular judgment. And then the department is also following up. Another matter relates to Bikaboa. The department is actually instituting this claim against Bikaboa. What happened is that Bikaboa was contracted by the department to render services regarding to supply of cable. So they supplied a cable. They were supposed to supply 2,000 meters cable, but they supplied 382. And then they claimed for 2,000 meters. So we are actually instituting a civil case against them. Someone has already been issued against Picacon. The last matter that I wanted to talk to relates to a contract that was entered by the department with a service provider called Bikaboa for an amount of 154 million. In terms of that particular contract, the department was supposed to actually pay in advance payment of 10%. That advance payment was not paid by the department, and then which resulted in the began taking the matter to court. And then the court ordered that the department must then pay that particular 10%. So this is something that could have been avoided because the contract was very clear that advance payment was paid. However, certain officials within the department, they could not actually execute the contract as agreed, which then rendered the whole process irregular expenditure. So we are actually following up against those officials who were involved in the former DG and the former chief of the department. And there are a number of other cases that internal audit has already referred to legal services that we are still currently assessing them with the state attorney in terms of the prospects of success before we could even institute a civil action. Because we don't necessarily receive a report from internal audit and then immediately institute a civil action without assessing the prospect of success. Those are the measures that we will, in due course, come back and report to the committee. I think that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you very much. I must say in advance that the last, from page 21 to page 24, it must be privileged information we are receiving, and it can't be used somewhere outside this meeting, because these are still matters that are pending legally, and if we start engaging them, we might find ourselves prejudicing the position of the department on them. So I'm saying, yes, if you want to ask questions of charities, let's do that, but you can't use that information outside the meeting, because it is claims that are done against people, and they might use that, yeah, you even sat and discussed about that in your own meeting, and therefore undermining the innocence up until proven guilt syndrome in the process. I will ask for questions unless the minister want to comment first.
Yeah, perhaps just to say that you can see that some of the matters that were to do, they are quite old matters, but which you can't escape, they will catch up with you in the near future if you escape them now, so we've had to deal with them. One such matter that we haven't actually dealt with, which we'll deal with in briefly, is about the South African Defence Force getting involved in painfully in issues which are sort of tired of victims, and then they bring it back at some point. Thank you.
Okay. Manuel Maybach, Memutupa, Feki.
Thank you, Chair, Minister, DG, I have a couple of questions which I want to pose to you, and you can decide who should deal with them. And then I have one or two comments to make based on the presentation. The first question is just, excuse my ignorance, what is EOH? The first question, EOH. My second question is, the new allegations which we see on page 20, that they looked at by the SRU now. More leaks, drop a block, set a bend. What is the monetary value of the alleged wrongdoing? Obviously, I understand it's been detected and investigated, but what is the nature of the allegation in terms of the money we're talking about beyond each of those three aspects? And then thirdly, and it really links up to my next question as well, who appointed Fumile? If you look at bullet number 3 on page 22, it says the part of the investigation was found that even the appointment was in contravention. Who's responsible for making an appointment like that? And same with these payments that are being made wrongly, if you like, in advance or afterwards, but without any product being delivered, that sort of thing. Who's responsible for that? Is it the CFO or the DG? And are they being held responsible? And if they have left the department, or government, are they being pursued wherever they are hiding, because they're still around. But does it mean if you leave the services that you then scot-free? So those are the questions, Chair, which I would hope to get some clarity on. Then let me just begin by saying that we can start with a graph on, you know, the famous graph showing the trends, the IE graph, which shows a downward, a very positive, encouraging downward trend on page 10 of irregular expenditure. And it's heartening to see that sort of thing happening, and we refer to it in part. And it does indicate progress. It does indicate a change of leadership, in my view, a changing of the guard and a different approach. Otherwise, one wouldn't see such a radical dip in IE. My problem with that is, let me first make another point. The DG also referred to whistleblowing, and that there's a trying to do as much as he can to enable whistleblowing. And the minister very importantly referred to the culture of the department. He specifically referred to a subculture of malfeasance, of naughtiness. And it's very important, that comment about the culture and the comment about the whistleblowing, because they speak to one another. Unless we change the culture of the department, we're not going to make any long-standing sustainable progress in terms of clean governance. But we won't change the culture of the department if people are scared to speak out and come forward. It's not helpful when people, when whistleblowers in this country are demonized in the press and the public by their own minister, as we've seen happen. Not this minister, this department, but we know what I'm referring to. That kills the culture of whistleblowing, which is sorely needed in this country. Because people need to be able to understand that they are free.
Why are you deliberating? Let's ask more questions. The deliberations is coming.
Excuse me.
Why are you deliberating whilst you are supposed to be asking questions?
I'm making a comment, Chair. I ask questions, and I'm making a comment on the report that was submitted to this meeting.
Okay.
So, unless people feel free to speak out instead of feeling compelled to hide and to keep and to cover up, we're not going to make the kind of progress that we need to. So I think it's very encouraging that there's at least an effort at encouraging whistleblowing, and I want to urge the department that everything be done to protect them. Because we know people have lost their lives and spoken out on matters. But those are protected, and that they're not demonized. They are in fact the part to fighting criminality in the department. So, however, Chairperson, whilst one wants to thank the department for the cases, the ongoing cases, and also the ones that have been finalized, and we see a number of verdicts, we see the stats here, guilty findings, page 6 and 7 for instance, I think it is. My concern is that, you know, if we could, it's all about consequence management, of course, and this is consequence. But if the consequences are not dire enough or severe enough, if it's a slap on the wrist most of the time, what are we achieving? Spending a lot of money, a lot of time and effort, finding people guilty. A lot of people have been found guilty. The stats are there. I don't want to misquote it. Yeah, I think 86 on the one. And the other one, 40 cases, who were found guilty. Then it says, what happened to them? Well, in the one case where the 40 were found guilty, only 7 were dismissed. And where 86 were found guilty, only 8 were dismissed. That's less than 10%. Now, I understand there are HR processes and regulations and what have you. And they often stand in the way of effective action. And the HR department are quick to tell you that, oh well, you know, it's his first transgression. He's got a clean record with the department. So even though he's found guilty of a very serious thing, you know, give him a written warning. Even counseling. It's crazy. I'm asking, are we getting enough bang for our buck, so to speak, in terms of the consequences bestowed on those who are actually found guilty? These people are guilty, but they get a warning. Most of them give warnings, a verbal or a written warning or even a final warning. The point is, 80% of the people who are found guilty in this department still stay inside. They carry on. Nobody's demoted even. You see, Chair, so I think you'll agree with me, we need to send out a very strong message. I mean, if the department is doing all this good work, but we're finding people guilty, but they basically stay on the job and they're there to carry on as usual, if they get the chance, if they get the opportunity in the future. I don't know from a legal point of view, from an HR point of view, whether there's more that can be done to send out a stronger message to those who are found guilty of wrongdoing. But thank you very much, Chair, for that, and the DG for the presentation. I think it indicates progress. I'm just concerned that the consequences might be a little bit too heavyish in terms of achieving our goals in cleaning up the department. But this department, Chair, let me just say this. This department, Minister, can become the shining city on the hill. If it continues with what it's doing, and if it effectively deals out consequence management, rids the department of the bad apples properly, not give them a slap on the wrist, we can set an example in this department to the rest of this country. And my word, does the country need an example? We can set an example to show how to deal with corruption and mismanagement and irregular expenditure. Thank you very much.
In actual fact, now that I have more than a few questions, I've been covered in other instances.
I'm not interpreter.
My apologies, Chair. Can I be allowed to speak 12 official languages now?
If you are not answered properly, don't complain of not being answered.
Okay. I just saw this is a little bit of a little bit of a little bit Chair, let me also appreciate the report that has been presented by the DG and also the introduction by the Minister. Chair, when you look at the report, one can really appreciate that there is progress, and I fully agree and concur that something can be done, which is precious or beautiful about this department. We can see the work. There is positive results, Minister and your team. Minister, however, one would want to understand from these cases that are being presented, one can also see that there are those who are at home in terms of. The presentation or the report, the confusion there for me becomes to page 6 when you say the state of disciplinary cases as at 30th April 2023 And also the 63 cases, I don't know whether the suspension without pay is it 19 plus 12 when you look at page 7, is it 19 plus 12 or is it 19, the initial report or the second report? I'm not quite sure if I can get clarity in terms of that. And when you look at it, my question is on the monetary value, how much are we paying for those who are at home currently? And that one would want to understand. And also, in terms of these suspensions with pay, because I believe that there are those ones without pay, there are those with pay, even if they are not even indicated. I just want to get clarity in how do we deal with a situation whereby if you are told that Miyoko was not suspended in line with which was needed, how do you deal with such cases? I may be at home for a period of a year and it's an illegal suspension. How do the department deal with such cases? And also, one is looking at the progress, of course, in terms of the forensic cases. And one can understand that you have appointed a service provider to deal with the outstanding cases, and 91 cases are being outsourced. Is it one service provider or different service? That would be my question. And secondly, is there any plan that has been put in place by the department, especially the audit side of the department, any plan to put in place so that we are able to phase away the services of the service provider in the near future? Because my belief is that we need to build in-house capacity to deal with such things. And also, what then becomes the relationship between the Office of the Auditor General, SCOPA, and what we are doing of investigating cases? Chair would want to know, because if it's financial years 2019-2020, of course, by this time around, in other instances, you do have an audit outcome or opinion from the Office of the Auditor General, which says it, whether you proceed with cases, whether it's red flags that have been raised in terms of a particular transaction. What then? How do you deal with them? And at what point do you bring them to the party in terms of this investigation? I will also deal with Chair, if you allow me. I've dealt with page 13 in terms of the service. In terms of the SIU report, Chair, you have said that we must not dwell much into that report, but there are general questions that one may ask in terms of what is being presented. For instance, if there's a proclamation and the defaulted service provider intends to make a payment, and what then becomes a sanction of the department thereafter? Yes, I've committed, I've contravened these laws as Miyoko Consulting. Then I'm prepared to pay. Then after payment, are we not going to blacklist such service providers? Are we not going to say that these are the sanctions, apart from what recovering on monetary value, but also you saying to that a warning to them, maybe that register, that we blacklist people, are we using that as a department? I'm raising this chair because in most instances, other people, they are able to run away with crimes because they are able to pay a certain amount of money, and then with the quality they continue to get jobs from different, how do we deal with such actually? That's my point, Chair. And how do we deal with officials, Chair? How do we deal with officials that knows exactly that these services was not rendered by a particular X company in terms of the service level agreement, but you continue to pay a plus 1.4 million? How do we deal with such? And they go, not necessarily have to wait for the department, to wait for the department, whether you will charge the accounting officer or the CFO of the department. How do we deal with such without us have to wait for 4 to 5 years, and after that particular period you may want to disagree somebody for something that was committed in 2019. And when you look at Chair, the status of recovery and of civil and criminal, I will also go to that, Chair, without necessarily compromising the details of the court, but on general specific terms of what needs to be done in our part. And I'm quite excited that the DG was saying that we had 91 awareness program, which is very good. That also sends message to your employees to say that at all times this is what we are supposed to do. However, Chair, my worry is that I will also go to a statement, something like a statement of similar to what my colleague raised earlier, especially on the issue of preparations of the annual financial statement. My interest to this one is, when was this statement done? And whether as a department are we preparing, if not, to have an in-house capacity of doing our own financial statements instead of outsourcing the financial statements. I think from many years ago up to now, we should have been at a particular level of saying that we do have CFO and we do have budget and treasury office within our department, and how do we begin to do our own financial statement? Because Chair, if one may want to comment, is that this is one of the functions that in most cases expose many of our departments on the capacity of finances. And Chair, some issues they don't want us to wait for a particular process to take place. If we do have our proper planning processes and a plan to say, for us to cap illegal activities or unnecessary, irregular and wasteful expenditure, other issues you deal with them at a go, you don't have to wait for a longer period of time. If you look at one of the cases that I say, if we are to pay for the services that we did not render, of course the relevant official must be disciplined at the goal. But I think with regards to any other or many other issues, Chair, one must welcome this report, and it clearly shows that we can do better, we can do much, if we can improve on the time constraints in other issues, and do not have to wait for the end of the financial year, and encourage Chair, maybe on a quarterly basis, that we do have an audit report on quarterly basis, so that we are able to respond to certain issues as and when they occur or happen. If we can really have that, Chair, I think strengthen that office of your audit unit. It can help a great deal going forward. Thank you very much, Chair. That would be my submission. And I think I can tell you that the people who are going to be able to do this, thank you.
It is not allowed that when you arrive late, you disorganize the meeting. It's not allowed. If you come late, just respect that you are late.
I'm not late.
I'm not talking to you. Are you late?
Okay. Do you manage it? You know the first page, this page, the GM. Looks like a GM. You know, so the GM a lot. This page, which is page number 5, I tried to look at it in different angles. Looking at these numbers, going to the next pages, looking at the other numbers, I'm not sure whether this page summarizes the numbers or not. Mm-hmm. If it does, maybe let's look at the headings on the left column of that page. Because I looked at a fraud, and then I'll look at the next page. It says progress report on forensics. What is the total number on my page 5? You know, if that could be tabulated so that we should not miscalculate or double count individuals and cases.
Just a minute. 86 is the number of cases. How many people are involved in this 86? It's 144 people.
Yes.
66 is the number of cases. How many people involved? 166. 116, I mean. 20 cases, 28 people involved. 12 cases, 20 people involved. One, just like that. So the numbers are not necessarily equivalent to the numbers on your left or right.
No. I understand that first page. But I was checking. Okay. This is the front page that summarizes exactly what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the next page. It says, page 7. Status of the 63 disciplinary cases in Daily Maverick. Does that 63 included in this 144? You know? That's the question I'm asking.
Okay.
Whether it's something else. Linked to that question, I was talking about double counting to avoid double counting. I understand the incidents can be 2, but people that are involved can be more. So that one, I think you are right there. Now, that's the clarity that I was seeking. And also, in these different cases, where you have got the number you are talking about, Chair, Uku, there was the improper expenditure 12. Maybe let me go to individuals, where it says 20. Can this person found to be in the 20? Can he be found in the one of theft? Can be found in, you know, he has committed many. I think in your report there's where you are saying this person was not found guilty, but because he committed another misconduct, he was dismissed for another. my one uncle is already double counting on one individual. Now two incidents. So if you could make that simple to read. On the resignation, I think the report is not saying whether you follow up, but that's where you are talking about their pension funds. You should roll their pension funds. Is it the same? Okay, this one here, Maverick. In the absence of daily Maverick reporting, were we going to go through this case? Is it daily Maverick a source of us to do the investigation? Or we had already had our internal information to do investigation? There's something called state witness. Do you have state witnesses in your cases? Whereby myself, Kutas, can say, no, Minister, I know about what is happening here. And then I would want to come forward and assist you. Do you have such in your investigations? I think there's something we, in the last meeting, we spoke about. I think member from the other party was concerned about 50 being found guilty but only 4 being dismissed, something like that, as an example. There's nothing wrong with that. In terms of the law, that can happen. You can have 50 guilty and all of them are not dismissed. But the issue that we want to warn the department is that the possibility is also high, Minister, whereby individuals that are prosecutors or representing the state can also weaken the case intentionally, because the chairperson cannot fetch things that are not as said in the case to make the case strong, because he or she knows something. So all those external people that you are using to lead this case as prosecutors, we request you to have a watertight individual, if I could use that word, that this person has got no interest to can make the individual to win the case, even if we see that this case is strong. So there are those issues that you'll find people can weaken the case. And then this process of the SIU, to me, is like what the chair was saying. It's a report in progress. But again, the question that I'm asking of state witness, do you have whistleblowers on this side as well, on the SIU? I must say our country, in terms of whistleblowing, it's not strong. I can cite 2 examples of people who died. You can cite an example of Eskom where one of the person can't find employment because she was a whistleblower, a legal person from Eskom. Others had to cross the country because of fear. Do you have whistleblowers? And are you really using the protection of those whistleblowers to the teeth of the case? I think the other thing is just general from what member Leon the second on the draft.
Maybe.
Thank you. He visits. That's why I forget. He's a visitor in the community.
Maybeck is always here.
Okay, Nega is visit. You know that page 10? Comrades. When you look at that year of 2018-2019,
and you look at those main accounts, I mean those two accounts, main and the water trading, both figures seem as if there were irregularity or irregularities were committed. And when you look at that figure, it's the budget. It's quirky budget, everyone. The whole year's budget, which was had irregularities. And now, Minister, this is not an easy task to plan uproot. It really showed the in-depth of what you as a team has gone through to go to that, what is that, it's 102 million and 101 million of those two accounts. If I read correctly, you'll correct me. Which to me, I think we really need to appreciate the process that you have gone through. Like I was saying, this is general. In your report again, there's where you are saying a 4 billion or a 2.2 billion you have reported to the, yes, on page 11. 9 cases of a total value of 8.3 billion has been submitted to National Treasury for condonation. My understanding of the word condonation means you are accepting, or you are saying Treasury must waive the usage of that money to be correct. So that to me, just maybe it's an issue of financial English to me. Thank you, Chair.
Alex, this is too funny. I was running next to my car.
I wish you the report long ago.
Why is it not physical sitting and what's the news for the first time? What is this one?
I didn't sleep reading the report.
We all did this. There's no Africanism here. We started the meeting at 9:30. We listened to input. We asked the question. So when we was this all open reason? We must not do that. We start at 9:30. The presentation was made here. So Nina, it is all of it. Nina, my questions. What is that?
My formally humble apology for arriving late. I was in the airport at 9. Yes, it was, I was not in the meeting. Also to apologize on the noise between my neighbor. I was asking, where are you in the meeting? That's one issue, Chair. In appreciation of the report, as I read the report, and also in appreciation of the work done by the department, out of the history of this department when we arrived in the term of the office, issues that have been raised which we don't know and many issues that were handicapping our progress. And the revelation that have happened when a process of investigation has happened. What I'm not getting, Honorable Minister, is a sustainable solution that would ensure that issues of this nature would not happen the way they have happened. The way that has happened. There's something that is called in the administration a data management of the programs of the department, which are integrated in the planning management, a center that sees what is the other office doing, which is against the planning, a systematic way which should help the department upfront and limit these negative activities that have happened in the department. Does the department have such a center, a popularity? But Nakwemosh, so that you limit these issues not to happen. Do we have that strategic management center as a department? That is a departmental system, systematized, because to get to, you chase that one, you chase that department, chase that program, chase that unit, it's problematic. So I just wanted to ask that question, Chair. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it, Chairperson.
Intimidating. I succeeded in intimidating you. Just to show you.
It's because the IAD volunteers to.
Okay.
And I'm a police.
Okay. Thank you, Minister. I think the my apologies, Mr. Minister, for discomforting you. Firstly, I think from here we must close the assertion that we are all agreeing that your preface is correct, that we at some point, and unfortunately you were not here when that happened, at some point, and when I'm saying you were not here, you were not part of us, when we were human settlement, water and sanitation. Unfortunately, I happen to be representing this committee in a meeting of whips and chairpersons. The department was sitting at the door case, or the doorstep of the building, with an intention that unless you convene the meeting, you will be asked to leave the meeting. Because that meeting, which is called the strategy meeting, had an intention to do away with water and sanitation as a department, given the legacy report that we received and the practice thereof. There was a time when we were instructed as the leadership to vote against the budget of the department. Given what you are saying, the Hollywoodness of the department and the response thereof of the people in office. The difficulty that we had by that time is that you were sitting with the sense of incumbency that needed to answer for itself justifiably. That is why I'm sure we are the only department in this parliament who have got two legacy reports in one term. the legacy report that we received from the administration of the that ended in 2019 and the one that took over from 2019 are not the same. You are giving us a state of a legacy report from where you came in late. There was a legacy that was there before you. And the attitude is not the same. At some point we must state that point. We, for 2.5 years that we were here, we had no DG. We had no CFO. We had no body at the senior level to answer to questions and to be committing the department. And this is the point I want to make, that is why at some point we did make a statement that we believe that this money that we have lost, the work that we have lost, to us at some point we said it was deliberate. We were allowing it. We were making it possible for it to happen. But if you do not want to appoint a CEO, I mean a DG, a CFO, it means you really do want to do willy-nilly things that are not correct, because there shall be no DG to answer. So the DG does not want to appoint the DDG underneath him, because he will want to, if he is there, he will want to just do things willy-nilly. And it's for that reason that since 2004, you have a difficulty of just having a DG. And the point we are making, South Africa is crying of unemployment. People that are qualified, we are not employed. We are struggling to employ people. We are struggling to employ a CFO when there are people who are qualified. You are struggling to employ a permanent HR head when you have got people who have got HR department, but you are busy continue employing people when there is no one to oversee whether you are employing correctly or not. And therefore, when these things happen, you want to cry foul. No, we want to refuse to be made to be part of that process, because it's a long process. But we can, here in this meeting, we can confirm that your attitude, your preference is the correct one. That we can see a better water and sanitation with the department that is answerable. Of course, there is still a lot to do. But there is light at the end of the tunnel. We must appreciate that point. Without wanting to... If you go to a river, you find a fish, and you hold it up, and you thank it for swimming, it will be wrong. But it has got no option. If it doesn't swim, it will starve and die of hunger. So you are that fish. You want to appreciate your swimming without necessarily wanting to overstate that point, but that swim is accepted. At some point, and I think DG, in English terms, you need to explain this confusion that normally comes up. What does the word condonation mean? And I've heard it being asked many times by ourselves, by other people who are not necessarily part of us and those that are part of us. Why do you need to condone certain things, and when? Because my understanding is that you condone on the basis of you having done certain things, which is legal in terms of the legal term. But people get into that condone, you condone because you are hiding something. And I'm sure if we just explain it, and not here, not only here in this meeting, in most of the meetings where you are made to present, explain why condonation is necessary. And when, and what does it address when condonation is applied for? Well, it is applied only, and it can only be given when you have done certain things that are legal in this nature, therefore you can condone. But what is it? So I think you really need to give yourself time to take people on board with you, for them not to look at you as you You are hiding something by applying for. When I was in local government, there was a clause that I know. Seki was in the legislature. He used to hum on us, and I think he was missing the point also. Why do you apply Section 36? He was asking this question. This Section 36 is hiding theft, and because we were accounting to him in human settlement, he was the chairperson of the portfolio committee. And he believed that, no, this application of Section 36 is something that you are using to steal. But he was correct in... If you don't explain it, it might mean that point. So this condemnation, to me, it's not a bad thing, but it must just consistently be explained and be made to be heard by people. One question, and not only okay. When you do your recovery plans, do we do a prior research, for instance? If a company is owing 10 billion rand, or 1 billion rand, let me give an example, and we send SIU to go and file for recoveries, we pay SIU to do that. Do you do a prior research as to whether does that company have that money? Are you not chasing lizards when crocodiles are in the river, rather than going for crocodiles, or rather than not going for it because there is no crocodile, even a lizard, to be followed up on. The issue on war on leaks, our understanding when we came in here was that war on leaks is something that when it started, it was not a legal thing. The president then, Honorable J.G. Zuma, did announce that let's have this thing as well. And of course, it was not budgeted for at announcement. But he was expecting that in the following year, we will have to budget for it to continue. And we then, in our beginning of the meeting, that we need to explain it and condone it in order for it to go away in terms of the debt in your books. How far are we in that process? Because it seems we are still going to have a legacy report of our exit still with war on leaks as a consequence of the work we did not do. Generally, just in agreeing with the Honorable Maybeck and Honorable Zeki, Minister, are you not wanting to change your misconduct charge on your on these people to a... Because we are convinced that a misconduct that brings about a 9 billion rand debt is not a misconduct. It means this somewhere people said and planned that this is how we are going to corrupt the system. This is how we are going to lay a hand on this 9 billion rand. For instance, but if you read on the report, it will tell you one employee did not, his expenditure level was 1 billion, but he went to 3 billion because he changed the scope of work. It is a plan of how to deal with this issue. It's not a coincidence. Therefore, the issue of first offender and not second offender becomes null. You can't be a first offender and you are very capable of misappropriating 1 billion rand. And you are going to be called that you are a first offender. So are we not having another name of calling this thing, rather than being just an employee misconduct, or to a mutiny, to a sabotage, economic or political, in order for us to can justify the usage of no longer the Labor Relations Act in as far as the employee relationship, the phenomenon of a first offender, second offender, repetitive offender, which allow you to do what Seki was talking about. give written warning because it is the second offender. But this written warning has got the 2 billion rand on it. It's money that for the rest of my life I might not have seen in my life. But somebody's given a pat on the wrist, as the Honorable Maybeck was saying. So to me, Minister, we want to get a little bit of a stronger attitude towards this mishaps, because it is and we agree with the fact that there are some of those that you are challenging the outcome, because we are not convinced that it is not deliberate that we are losing cases. We are not convinced that it's not deliberate that we are underrepresented in order to lose the case. It is our conviction that this is a planned, it's sabotage, it is economical mutiny that we need to deal with, and we must face it here. But I think, it's a comment I wanted to overall make, but the members have already raised their issues. But as I'm saying, in general, we do see the good work you're doing. We might be early in saying so, but thus far, the good work is very noisy, not to be heard. And it must be appreciated. Yes, Minister. Would you step out there, Commander? Mara huyo zo guwe mina bonango yana.
Well, thank you very much, Chair, and the honourable members. I'll just answer in the form of or respond initially in an overview on just a few matters, and I'll go back to the department for detailed answers to questions. Let me deal with number one, which is culture of malfeasance. Yes, there's been that culture, and I want to reconfirm that. And I don't think we have succeeded to a point where we can say we've totally uprooted it. There's still elements of it that are resistant to removal, but it was steadily building up. And if you look at it, it also includes failure to produce gain audits. It includes consistent understanding, huge understanding, like we found, more than 2 billion. There's no longer understanding. It's just failure to spend. So, in broader terms, it includes quite a number of things. But one such report that illustrated this, and where I could convince, was when the head of internal audit at one point presented the report to us. I think it was last year or 2021, on war on leaks. And this thing called drop a clock. So the head of internal audit spent something like 2 hours just presenting on that. And I could see that if you internal audit, your head of internal audit reports to you like that, not SIU, not SAPS, not an internal person, it must be interpreted, even to a person who is who has very low ethics and very low, low culture of consciousness in terms of accountability in public life. It would churn your intestines the way it was reported. So I'm saying that culture has been there, and to a point where you are able to officialize that kind of subculture of malfeasance. So it will take time to uproot it and change things around. But we're not going to throw our hands in the air and say this is too much, this is why. For the good of for your name and all of us in Parliament, in the eyes of the people of South Africa, there must be semblance of accountability. We must turn the corner somewhere and go upwards towards their expectations, and not just say work with the perpetuate. And we're trying hard. We can do better. You're right, honourable member, saying one of the things the department may need to do is to tighten up for expected outcomes when a disciplinary case opens. But and tightening up will require your understanding and your assistance. So in the case of a DDG who, it took, 3 years to deal with, and finally she was found guilty, dismissed, and all of that. But the procedure and the law in South Africa says that that person, after getting a dismissal, goes to the chamber and complain. So which means that you are done, but you're not done. And the case is pending. We still have, but it's no longer paid, because as soon as we receive this, we stop paying. But whether we can fill up that one vacancy that we're left with now, acting position at DDG level, construction, on infrastructure, we still have to clear this. And this is something that there's nowhere in the world where you can be found guilty. The only thing is you go up, you don't go sideways. It just shows that there's something that needs to be corrected in terms of our labor law dispensation and the whole thing in general. But we try to really deal with disciplinary matters. When we have an appeal case, DDG Fundagub knows, she must state it. She must give me background, because I don't sit in hearings, I don't sit in. But when a person writes to me and say I'm appealing, it becomes a quite an elaborate issue, because I need to get who was the chair, what were the details, and so on. And we've been commended even by labor in that department that we seem to be very thorough when we deal with these things. But of course, at some point, I'll feel a person is appealing. There are cases where I feel a person is appealing on a minor case, just because he or she is uncomfortable. Then they tell me that you can't go up, you can only go down. In other words, when a person gets a year and is complaining, I can't say, okay, give the fellow 2 years. There's been one such case when I felt, no, this fellow is appealing what appeared to me as less than what I would have expected in terms of the sentence. But he's appealing. And
No,
you need to double. And then they said, no, you can't double. It's against the law. So there will be such things that we need to look at. Let me pass that. Number two, procedures. I hear your analysis. Was it yourself where you were talking about? Yes, the imbalance between the initial charges and the outcomes, final outcomes. But if you count in those categories where it is detailed, your written warnings, your final written warnings, your dismissals, and suspensions of salaries for a period, they take quite a chunk of, they reflect the seriousness with which we look at this. Because a written warning is not like a verbal warning, and the number is quite bigger there, and even bigger on final ones, which puts you on the edge, because once you go beyond that, you are taken as dismissed. And then those that were actually dismissed, and those that whose salaries were suspended. A salary suspension for 3 months, it bites. It bites. You have to report at your home that I'm not paid. You, if you are a man, you have to report to your wife if you have your wife. I don't have money, I'm suspended. I'm praying for the end of this 3 months. If you are a woman, to your partner, say, hey, I'm no man. So it embarrasses, it takes a toll on you, so it's not a minor thing. But nevertheless, I agree with Dr. Tyson and see that we do our best so that we capture the perceptions of the public and not be seen to be underperforming. In terms of perceptions of public, in our way, the country seems to be dominated by the culture of corruption. The Daily Maverick, was it a source? It wasn't a source, not at all. What in fact, the Daily Maverick had an agenda in terms of my view, and it was a political agenda, which I can only speculate about. Because they apparently had some information of things that we had and were dealing with, but it was not long after a reshuffle, and then they said, no, those cases that we found pending in one, at one level or the other, 63 of them, they said we shuffled them. And we were supposed to be driving an agenda of President Cyril Ramaphosa of wanting to shuffle those cases. The first thing was, I didn't know that he would have had interest in water to a point there where he would have needed to reshuffle and send someone who would protect such things. It was the first time I came across that. But we could only associate it with a team that we found there that had been set up by my predecessor, one of the four teams that she had that were paid for by the department. They were advisory teams. They were four of them. They were paid, all of them. There was a team that was dealing with disciplinary cases. Now, there's no law that covers that in the country. You can't set up a team to advise you, and you pay them as a minister. You pay them to advise you on disciplinary cases. But I ask, out of all these people, whoever sits as chair and presides over it, there's no, because there's no procedure. Who presides over here? There's no. Established to advise. In other words, you sit like this as minister, then they advise you, because there are procedures in the department. You can't just bring a culprit to an advisor of sorts. So it really was an unnecessary, in my view. That's why we said no. In any case, there are tasks to the minister, and she's elsewhere, and therefore their term has ended. So now, Daily Maverick make reference to those. Now, we kept quiet when they made the first article. Then they followed with the other and following with. So we regarded that as serious. That's when we made an appeal to the chair, of which was still very really indebted to the chair for allowing us. Because we said, we want to hold a public meeting, but convened by the portfolio committee, and the portfolio committee being the center of that, so that we can make a presentation. Those cases were literally from the department. There was nothing new. There was no research, as they were alleging, and making it sound like they have gone deep and they've come up with something that is unknown. They just took what we're dealing with. And as a matter of fact, we're dealing with those matters and we're reporting the updates. So they were not necessarily our... We just had to demonstrate that what they were doing was really was bordering on I would say torture in the media circles and so on. Ordinarily wouldn't have been allowed and so on. But we responded. The following week after the portfolio comment, Nathan said, following our two articles, DWS jumps. And we looked at the article, jump. Where did we jump to? Because all we did was to say, we invited the journalist, by the way, to
attend.
He was there. And there were a number of people who were saying, no, we're aware of what. And we're going to attend the meeting. And we're going to make it known that we're attending this meeting because we want to deal with this thing. And so on. So they say we jump. And I was wondering, what jump? Because we never jump. And that was the last time they ever wrote an article in that regard. Let me leave that, Daily Maverick. Let me come to tighten up after I've done that. The last two, sustainable solution. Honestly, in public service, a lasting solution to deal with corruption, whether it is a culture, subculture, or ongoing corruption, is to tighten up on your accountability. Firstly, we have an accounting officer. He is the first person to be made accountable to the executive authority. It starts there. If your accounting officer is an accounting officer in name, have done an account for anything, then that's where things become loose. But in this instance, you didn't even have a person to call to account because you had an acting. An acting is an acting. It's never firm. It's never sustainable. It's never can be. You can only. In other words, if you make that person account, you can even refer to it as a unsustainable accounting, because the person is gone. You can't build any system there because the fellow is there 3 months, 6 months, or a year. You can't invest. You can't develop any philosophy to deal with a particular trend in the department, and therefore in the public service and in a department like this one, because you can't invest. The person is not sure, is not what and what, and so it becomes a problem. Now, so the first one, I've been in public service myself for quite some time. I don't know any other miracle. Appoint people in positions so that they hold others below them accountable, but you yourself hold the first person accountable. People who are creators of this, who are perpetuators of this, are ordinary human beings. They are not even clever. That's why they get caught. They are not. They don't come with heavenly miracles to bypass anything. They do these things and these things develop because they are allowed to do so because someone is benefiting out of them. It's no miracle. So what is sustainable is to appoint people, have them in the first place. Once you have them, let them create a new culture of accountability, systems of accountability. Insist on that, and it will. But it also helps, in my experience, to appoint people who are competent. It helps to appoint people who are competent, who like to be competent themselves. Well, if you don't do that, you soon become indebted yourself. Whether you're an accounting officer, you are incompetent. Certain things happen without you being aware because you're incompetent. You don't know your job and so on. So that's the line. And the last one is war leaks. I've dealt with that. To say, I'm sure DG and Funabu will deal with the other part of it, but
where I am is is that I don't think that condemnation would apply to this one, to this two. Simply because your internal audit produced a report and said to you, here is a report. So where do you take the report? Where do you go? Two, SIU is already on the matter. All we're waiting for is an outcome. But DJ hasn't told me that they're looking for condemnation on this two. If they are, they will give us reasons why. What do we do with all these reports? Just a minute to say, when you look at, it started the way the chair said, innocent and non-problematic, and had some good intentions, but a minister, meaning in the United States what is this thing? No, in the United States terminology of ministers, they say you are secretary. If you are minister, you are secretary, meaning you are a secretary of a department, meaning you administer something. Now, the first step in terms of the report, when they started planning for it under the minister now and the department on their own, it was wrong right from the first step, because when you want to close leaks, you can't go and train a young staff for 4 years. You take a person to university, you say you want to close a leak on a manhole somewhere outside here. You send somebody for 4 years, you are going to give them how much for how long. So the implementation of the concept went the other way around, and many problems that ensued, even in terms of paying those people. But the intention was to take them to be employed by municipalities. Now, municipalities have their own systems and budgets. They can't take a flood of people who come from university to go and close leaks. They did even Kabeja, which had more than 6,000 leaks in their water system when we first went there. They couldn't hire graduates to do such, and you couldn't conceptualize it that way. So something went wrong down the line and up to the expenditure of 3 billion rand, which is unaccounted for, and it becomes a problem. Same as the trauma block.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Myberg, EOH is a company listed on the Joburg Stock Exchange, IT company. I don't know what the EOH stands for, but it's called EOH Holdings. It's an IT company, and we contracted with them also to provide us, they were an intermediary also to provide us with SAP software, so SAP was also involved in that. You asked a question on the monetary value of the new allegations. We don't know what the new allegations are. They haven't told us. So we don't know what the monetary value related to those new allegations is. We can provide you with the total amount spent on each of these things, like the dropper block and the warm leaks, if you would like that.
Yes.
You might have to figure it handy to get the honourable member now. I'll ask Impo to respond to the question as to who appointed Pumili. You also asked Honourable Myberg who is responsible for payments and are they being held responsible. I think Impo in his presentation did indicate that we do hold people responsible even if they've left the department. The final case that he talked about involves two former officials of the department who we are following up with in terms of civil action to reclaim money from them because we had to incur interest payment because of wrong administrative actions by them. So we do try and hold people responsible if our legal experts are of the view that we do pursue it legally. On your question about consequence management and are we at risk of just giving people a slap on the wrist, I think one point to make out is that And perhaps this will also answer your question, Chairperson, about the adjective or the descriptor that we use of financial misconduct cases. As you can see, financial misconduct is a generic term, but we don't charge someone with a charge of financial misconduct. People are charged with fraud or corruption or gross dishonesty, the kind of things listed on this slide here, or theft, or improper expenditure. So there's a range of different types of actions which can result in a financial misconduct related charge. Some of those actions are cases of clear deliberate wrongdoing, like fraud or theft. And if someone is found guilty for something like that, they deserve a severe sentence. But some of the charges might relate to an administrative process that wasn't properly followed, where an official had a responsibility to do some administrative process, and it's not motivated by a desire to be fraudulent or corrupt, they didn't do the process that they were supposed to do properly. And in some cases, then a sanction of dismissal is not the appropriate sanction if they're found guilty. Also, in terms of the legal framework for disciplinary action, it's not us who decide on the sanction, it's the presiding officer. And we can't tell the presiding officer what sanction to give. However, having said that, I do agree with you, Honourable Maiver, that we need to send a strong message in the department that we have zero tolerance towards fraud and corruption, that there will be consequences for people who are found guilty of fraud and corruption, and we do want to make our presiding officers who are appointed aware that this is our policy of the department. Honourable Matupa, Kela Boka di Kuchisho Takaho.
He did not hear, Minister.
No, I heard because Honourable Member Mios Matupa I thought that she is actually speaking in tongues when she was speaking. We'll follow that. I may as well disclose to you that my PLO, not PLO, as media liaison officer, is Ms. Mkhosi. She speaks fine Sesotho. And my assistant PM comes from that other part of the world. She speaks both Sesotho and Setswana very fluently. Tell that they are not very good teachers, but they are coming on my side. Thank you.
No, I heard you. I heard you, DJ. I heard you.
I think Honourable Myberg also raised a question about the relationship between the cases, the 63 cases described on the Daily Maverick slide and the other cases referred and the other cases in the previous slide. There is an overlap between the two. What we wanted to do is, because we presented to the committee previously on the 63 cases by the Minister, we just wanted to give an update. But there is an overlap between those cases and the cases in the previous slide. I'll ask Conrad if I finish just to clarify this a little bit more. With regard to officials on suspension, we are trying to run our labour relations completely regularly and completely in terms of the prescripts. So we think we do not have any illegal suspensions now. We only suspend people as we're allowed to do by the prescripts, where there's a legitimate risk that by having them staying on the job it might jeopardise our investigations, or they might be a threat to other officials or to processes in the department. I will ask Michael to respond to the question on how many service providers we've appointed to assist with our dealing with the backlog of internal audit investigations. As I explained in the presentation, we have a backlog of internal audit investigations. There was a time when our internal audit unit was undercapacitated, and it also had acting leadership, like much of the rest of the department. And during that time, a big backlog of internal audit investigations built up. We've now filled our internal audit positions, but we have to deal with the backlog. So we've only appointed service providers to deal with the backlog. We think once the backlog is dealt with, our internal audit unit with its full position will then be able to deal with all the cases on an ongoing basis. We sometimes, when the Auditor General does investigations, it does find indications of wrongdoing by our officials, and it informs us and informs our internal audit unit. And then that will lead to investigations by our internal audit units in collaboration with the Auditor General, which could lead to any of the actions such as disciplinary action or criminal charges, etc. There is a close collaboration between the Auditor General and our internal audit units, and they do share information as required. I will ask Impot to respond to the question on whether we've referred any of the companies like SAP or EOH, for example, to National Treasury for blacklisting. I'll ask Franz to answer the question on financial statements. Honourable Serki, it is possible that one person might be guilty of several offences, as you said, and as you correctly indicated, the DDG who was dismissed was charged for several cases, so that is correct. As I indicated earlier, we do follow up where necessary in terms of civil action or even criminal action where it's possible when officials resign to avoid disciplinary action, but I'll ask Daryl to elaborate a bit more on that. With regards to the question about state witnesses, and do we have such, Michael, you can also answer that one, please. There was a question on whistleblowers and whether they're protected and whether they're whistleblowers for SIU. With regard to the SIU, if you go to the SIU's website, you'll see on the front page, very dominant, it says anybody can be a whistleblower and report anything to the SIU. So the SIU, a major source of the SIU's investigations is based on whistleblowers, which whistleblow directly to the SIU. As I indicated, it then investigates it, and it, on the basis of its initial investigations, it finds there's a substantial case, then it passes the presidency for proclamation. We also have a system for whistleblowers in our department, and we do protect whistleblowers, and I'd like Michael to elaborate more on that as well. Honourable Sikwai asked a question about proactive measures. What proactive measures can be taken to ensure that we don't repeat the kind of problems that we had in the past with irregular expenditure and financial misconduct? I think the most important thing that we can do and that we've done is to strengthen the controls in the department. Particularly under our CFO, he has done a lot of work to strengthen the controls around key areas like procurement, supply chain management, but also our DDG for corporate services, together with the chief directors under her, has done a lot to strengthen our HR controls and to make sure that all of our appointments are done regularly. So we have much more robust controls in place now. So part of that controls is making sure, for example, that there's checks and balances. So, for example, if an official in the finance section makes a mistake or does things in the wrong way, before it goes all the way through, there are other people who check things before they're finalised. And both in Tavisin and France have put in place much more robust measures to make sure that we do things better. I think secondly, it's very important to have a DG and a chief financial officer who are committed to regularity. both of us are, and we're constantly emphasizing the department that everything that's done must be done regularly. That's the bottom line. We try to do things efficiently and effectively and regularly, and it must always be done in terms of regularity. The third important, very important thing, I think, is to have a very strong internal audit and an independent internal audit, which we have under Michael sitting down there. And as I said, we've capacitated, we've filled the vacancies in the internal audit unit. It's a very effective, very strong internal audit unit, independent. If I do something wrong, they will still report it and investigate it. And then the fourth thing, I think, as indicated by a number of honourable members, is consequence management, which we are pursuing. And all of these things together, I think, over time, will result in changing the culture of the department. With regard to the chairperson, your question about condonation and what does it mean, in my understanding, it's an accounting term. I'll ask Franz, the CFO, to answer that question, Franz, in a bit more detail. But basically, in my layperson's understanding, as someone who's not an accountant, it's basically the problem is that we've got this irregular expenditure will remain on the department's books until we have it condoned using the accountant in the accountancy firm. In order to do that, we need to go through various processes to show that we've properly dealt with it in terms of consequence management, the irregular expenditure. The Crunch will elaborate on that. With regard to the question about whether we do any research before trying to get money back from companies, I think Impo did mention that we do pursue legal action against companies if he and his colleagues and the state attorney and under him, in their analysis, we have a good chance of being successful in the legal case. There isn't any point in wasting money on proceeding having high legal costs and pursuing something where you have a very low chance of being successful. I think the Minister has largely answered the question on war on leaks. As I indicated earlier, we don't know what the allegations are that the SIU is currently looking into with regard to war on leaks. But the war on leaks project has ended. But I would like to ask Franz to talk a little bit more about the work that he's been doing with the relevant CETA and others to properly close off on war leaks and to provide all the information that the Auditor General has been asking for all the documentation so that all the paperwork can be closed off on war leaks. Colleagues, let's go down the line, and then down the line.
Thank you very much, Gigi. On the question around who appointed Fumile, the answer to the question is that there are five officials who were actually responsible in terms of making that appointment. As I've already alluded to, the fact that we are pursuing civil litigation, those officials are also cited, they are part of people who are being pursued with the company in terms of wanting the company to pay or them or the other to be absolved. So they are part of the litigation. So also in terms of the disciplinary processes, some of them have resigned, but there are those who are still within public safety. The other one is actually working, I think, within the department, the housing province. The disciplinary hearing is still continuing that other side. So that's what I can say. In terms of the question around the companies that would have actually committed malfeasance, what happened? Does it only end up when they pay back or so? The answer to that is that there are instances when we also pursue their recognition by the National Treasury. But as you would recall, in terms of the legislative framework, it is such that even before you could refer them to the National Treasury, there is a process that we need to embark on within the department. As we will speak now, we are actually embarking in a process of delisting EOH. We are exchanging in terms of the communication they have made surgery or in the
Chair and members, thank you very much, DG. Chair, I think Minister deliberated or elaborated on the status of the 63 cases versus the 86. And it is actually true, as I said, or as Minister had indicated, the 63 cases were basically the baseline as to when the ministry came, when the current ministry came into office. And so just to illustrate the progress that we've been making, these cases relate to all cases of misconduct, be it financial misconduct, insubordination, and any other case of misconduct. Whereas the 86 cases only relate to financial misconduct cases, mainly, as we've indicated, the irregular expenditure or improper expenditure. So to answer the question, and I think as an example, the suspension without pay, whether the 12 under the 63 are included under the 19 of the 86, and some of them are, those that are financial misconduct related are included into the 86 cases. Thanks, Chair.
Hello. Thank you, colleagues. All protocol observed. Colleagues, regarding the issue of officials that tend to want to resign before facing disciplinary action, currently we work in collaboration with the South African Police Services and the Asset Forfeiture Unit. So arrests are done publicly at the office, including in the Asset Forfeiture Unit, takes the person through to the residence in order to prepare the necessary documentation for forfeiture of assets before they are arrested and taken to the relevant courts for bail application. In most instances, the official resign is also the seriousness of the issue, the matter does not stop here. We blacklist the person on PERSA. There's a specific code that goes on to PERSA indicating that this person has resigned pending the disciplinary action in order to avoid a disciplinary action. As soon as that person applies to another government department, that department is flagged as a result of their personal code and contacts our department to find out what is the nature of why this person has resigned. Immediately we implement Section 16B of the 2000 Amendment, the Public Service Act, and talking about 16B. In terms of that process, the investigative documents and wherever we are in the process gets immediately transferred to the new department, and in collaboration with our investigators in the matter, we start the process either open or we continue running with the matter, depending on at what stage the process was in. At the same token, if the person has not gone to another department, we work in collaboration with the Special Investigation Unit, who in most instances, based on their prospects of success, pursues the matter civilly or criminally through the special tribunal. In these instances, we bring an application in terms of Section 21(3)(c) of the Government Employee Pension Law, which allows us to request the Government Employee Pension Agency to freeze the pension of this person pending the outcome of that civil litigation process, so that we can ensure that there is something that we can recover in the event that we are successful with the special tribunal cases. So the matter doesn't end when the person resigns, it just gets taken to different quarters, different levels. If the person is indeed incarcerated as a result of an outcome process, we then pursue a secondary process of liquidating either the business interest or the estate whilst they are serving a prison sentence. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you. Good morning, honorable members. On the issue of how many companies are on the panel of forensic investigators, there are 10 companies listed there, and we can read them throughout the process. So far, only 4 have been used, and the rest will receive cases as we move along, as more cases do become available. We also try and follow a competitive bidding process where each time we have a case, they must submit proposals, and the one with the best proposal and the cheapest price is the one who gets successful. But we also rotate them throughout to make sure that we don't then have one company being successful. So that is what we do. And then on the question of state witnesses, the first state witness would be our investigator who would have put the report together. vaccination, so they are well stood up in terms of what they are doing, and they also know the law of the land in terms of investigations. The other witnesses that we have are those who have, we come across them as we conduct our investigations, and they would have given us affidavits and so on. Those are the officials who would have witnessed the act that we are talking about and are willing to testify in the disciplinary hearing. We also have officials who are part of the incident, meaning they are also the transgressors, and those officials are more likely will also be charged along the line with those who have been accused. So those are the witnesses that we have. And then the other question has to do with the whistleblowers. We have a whistleblowing system whereby officials can report cases to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, which is hosted by the Department of Public Service and Administration. Such cases are referred to the Department for Investigation and are referred to internal audits to conduct the investigation. We conduct the investigation and issue a report that contains our findings, conclusions, and recommendations for further action, which includes your disciplinary action, criminal action, and your recovery processes. We also provide feedback to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline indicating what we have done with the case. And the commissioners, they assess the case to indicate whether they are happy with the outcome that was provided or not, and then they then decide whether to close the case or not. And in terms of the witnesses are protected because they are encouraged to remain anonymous as and when they report the case, but if they are right, if they are not anonymous, they can then come back and get feedback from the Public Service Commission regarding the cases that they've reported in terms of what has happened there. But even if they are not anonymous, we do not indicate their details in any of the reports. We withhold that information to make sure that they remain protected. If they are witnesses in our case and they feel that their life is being threatened, we then approach the Northern Police Services, and they can then put them into witness protection in terms of the Witness Protection Act, and that is the protection that we have. We also have protection in terms of the Protected Disclosure Act, which limits what the employer can do, for example, to avoid victimization of employees. So they are protected in terms of the Protected Disclosure Amendment Act from being subjected to disciplinary action, from being dismissed, suspended, harassed, and so forth. And anyone who's found to have contravened this act can actually be liable for civil action by a high court judge. So it's something very, very serious, and it's something that we teach to our officials so that they know that they are encouraged to report and they will always be protected regardless of what they say. Thank you very much. Thank you. Greetings to the meeting minister. Let me start with the OLDIC. The OLDIC program was divided into three phases. The total contractual obligation for both TWCTA and RENOTA was 4.9 billion at the time. So the phases were meant to manage also the budget. However, what happened between the TWCTA, which is our agency for implementing the program, they implemented phase one. However, when they came to phase two, they also brought in elements of phase three, which created contractual challenges with the department, because we had to run this program per phase so that we do not expose the department to unfunded project. So the current situation that led to concerns that were raised by the Auditor General is that the department took a decision to discontinue phase three. So when we're developing the financial recovery plan, phase three was discontinued. So the total spending to date is 3.5 billion, but I can also confirm that through this financial recovery plan process, we managed to save 873 million, which the TWCTA contracted with the service provider. Currently, there is a process of mediation between TWCTA and the service provider regarding the contractual matter. And then with regards to Drop a Block, the
total irregular expenditure, which is on our book, 282 million. And then on CDB, Chairperson has indicated that it could be issues of cases that are referred to SIU by various parties or individuals. But on our record, we did appoint CDB and Water for route intervention projects in both Free State and Northern Cape, and the total cost estimate at that stage was 181 million. So we'll be able to confirm the exact amount and the nature of the issue to be investigated, as DJ has indicated, as soon as we get further details from the SIU. Then regarding the annual financial statement, it is true that the outcomes of the audit are taken into consideration also on the investigation. There was a question whether we do take those into consideration. Yes, the outcome of both the AG as well as the SIU, we do take them. If there's a need to do further investigation, auditors normally do a regularity audit, financial audit, compliance audit, but they might point to specific areas where management will then have to go into detail. Capacity, yes, we do have capacity to compile annual financial statements. As Minister indicated, that the goal is to get to a clean audit. We do use in-house capacity, our own officials. Historically, that was the case, as our head of legal services indicated, that in that particular year, there was that regular appointment which was meant to assist with the financial. But I can confirm that, indeed, we do have internal capacity to produce annual financial statements. Then regarding the condonation, DG spoke to it as well, that in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, we are required to prevent unauthorized irregular fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But once we have those incidents, as indicated, we have to record them on our books. So it remains in our accounting books. We have to account for it. Then we initiate the process of condonation, as defined by National Treasury. It's where the relevant authority acknowledges that the irregular expenditure has indeed occurred. And then there's a process to pardon that. But before you pardon the incurrence of the irregular expenditure, there's a process that Treasury has allowed, which is detailed. But among others, you have to ensure that this incident is free of fraudulent, corrupt, or criminal conduct. And if there are those cases, then we have to go to the South African Police Service, which is those cases that DG also presented. But one of the conditions as well, we have to confirm that there are no losses. So if we have suffered any losses, the investigation will then point as to who is responsible, and those losses need to be recovered. It's one of the key requirements that we need to comply with. The other key requirement relates to disciplinary action, which DG spoke to comprehensively on where we are. So we need to produce evidence to National Treasury that we have taken appropriate disciplinary action against the responsible official or officials, and then also that we have taken remedial action to remedy that deficiency, as the portfolio committee was asking, how do we prevent that? So that is one of the conditions that we have to demonstrate to Treasury, that we have remedied that internal control deficiency so that it doesn't recur. It has not covered the 3 points that you have assigned. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair.
Where about?
Mine, Chair.
Now we're about. Okay.
Is that the right word?
No, I'm saying if you want to say something before the minister gives, you can. She is starting, he will come. Do you want to come too?
Just for 2 minutes each.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. My apology for Rubawa. Honorable Minister, when we came to this department, we were confronted by young people that went publicly to media stations claiming that they've not been paid by this department on the war on leaks. They were given hearings by SABC and some other media telling the world that they've not been paid by this department. I listened to the DG saying that the war on leaks issue is closed. I'm asking a question. Is it closed because we have gone through the process of investigation, what happened and all those issues? Have you closed that there is a claim of young people that they've been promised money and they've not been paid and many other issues? I don't want you to get to the detail when you ask the minister then, what are you doing about this? I just want to ask that so that they don't come back again about this war on leak issue. The minister, you have been the minister of public service. We listened to you when you were putting your policies and strategies in the department. There was a time where you went to media for plus minus 2 days explaining this issue that we are debating is a killer of the public service, this report. Not only your department and other departments. I wish you could share with the cabinet about where really are the loopholes on this matter. Where are we losing? I heard you when you were responding about my initial question. But I believe that it's either the labor relations, it has got loopholes for those that you are appointing to do whatever they want to do and undermine the public service money. It can open up for such activities. I believe you could be the best to have a succinct detail of where are we losing this. You can't employ a DG and the DG comes in and do funny things, understand the whole system, and that is fine, and it can go to condonation. I listen to some additional condonation. It is a sad clause of National Treasury. So there you could condone. It's not a nice thing. And also that thing needs to be reviewed, Honorable Minister. It doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound right to call a law. You call any billion, Honorable Minister. And you perhaps then, when it was agreed upon, it was a million. It was part of a million or 2 million. This condonation is billions in the public service. I may not know what's happening in the private sector, but I'm speaking about where there's huge employment and where there's a hope of our people to be employed. I do want to present to you, Honorable Minister, that this thing is not right for the funds of our people. The last question is, when a necessary is appointed as a DG or DDG or whatever, does the department deploy a psychological expert? Maybe Sitasha Mapara, the minister. Maybe you are employing I don't know what is a Mapara in the other way. People that have got mentally disturbed areas that do not care, they do how they please. Is there a clear psychological process to know me better, my mental ability of respecting my work? Just wanted to raise this because I'm listening to the responses from the DG and the other officials. is exactly. Who is this person? Who do we know this person really? You can discuss him about Rapa. I'm not saying you, Gamapara, your official. Thank you, Chess.
The word para comes from parasite.
The parasite.
Chairperson and the department, I think on the controls, I just want to hear your comment on the control. The president has said many times professionalization of the public service. Are we really towards that line, meaning that the people that we get are not parallel to they are really committed to the future of this country. But again, Minister, we have got Public Service Commission that normally reports incidents, in particular internal incidents of where a member of the department will do business. I don't know whether you have that report. My request, Chair, was that probably if that can be extracted, especially in those years, versus this year, versus today. It could be in columns, just a two-pager could be fine, not to explain the whole thing. In columns, maybe for the last 10 years, where you are able to see the trend of correcting that in line with the professionalization of the state. I don't know how did the person of Gauteng happen to pass the control measure of blacklisting people on person that happens to move, or he or she moved it before this process. I don't know, maybe if I could also say that, because now it's going to be disciplined in another department. That department may not be thorough as you are. Their interest and your interest is different.
Tell this to the my name is Paul.
You know, that difference to create a disjunction on the seriousness of the matter. Thank you.
Do you know of somebody called Todi?
Yes. Yeah.
You know him?
Edwin.
Hmm?
Edwin.
Hmm.
He
was an employee of Human Settlement in Gauteng. When he had issues, big issues with the Gauteng, he was employed in Free State. In 2021, he won a tender of water and sanitation in Swansea. In 2001, he was arrested. One man. And Maybeck says that it is our cage deployment. He says so. You are wrong. It's not. Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just the response from Shorty, if they want to fill up with the wood. Where do we lose it? What is that we should do in public service? One of the key things...
Is this not refusing? But they are still making noise.
The kitchen.
Yeah, just tell them. They are making noise.
Yeah, one of the fundamental policies that we have to adopt as a country. I mean, from that experience and which we're driving. And I hear the new ministers coming back to that. Is this thing called single public service in the country? We were at an advanced stage in convincing everybody in the country that we need this policy to adopt it. It will cut a number of sins that we are committing at the moment. through the spheres of government, local, provincial, international, because it comes with a number of things. It doesn't mean that it also goes to parastatals. You can have a situation where DG presides over in water and sanitation, presides over a number of SOEs, but they get paid almost twice higher than me, not even counting me. I'm not jealous of anybody's salary and so on. I'm fine with what I get, but it's an anomaly, and it's not inspiring to some people, and it's unfair to an extent. A director here in the legislature would probably get something else from a director who is in public service in terms of the Public Service Act, but in one country. But if that person is in SAA, would end something totally different. But this is the state. You don't do that if you know what you're doing. If you want to incentivize a particular category of people who are working for the state at different levels, you do that, but within a single framework, a single public service. That's the first thing that we have to do, and we're pursuing. Well, sometimes reshuffle states and so on. And then after 4 years, 5 years, we realize we need to go back to what we're doing. The second thing that needs to be pursued is something called, I think I forget its name, but it's a framework for determining salaries. It was called something index. I can't remember the name. We will perpetually in South Africa fight with public servants until all roads have potholes. We'll never resolve the problem of public servants wanting all the money that is available in the whole finance just requiring salaries. They will never be satisfied. If you ask me, if I ask you, you can confess that you and I are not satisfied with our salaries.
Not enough.
Yeah, it's not enough, but was stable. Now you can look at the cabinet, legislatures, magistrates, judges, all those levels, they are quite stable, even though they may want more salaries. But people who are employed in departments are never satisfied, and they are ready to down tools at the time, go to the street and so on. It's because you haven't settled a salary system. As I say, it was when we paid people cash, 1,000, to block the strike, which finally settled the strike, we wanted 2 years to deal with that. Now 2 years passed, we're not there to do that. Not even attempted, partly because of reshuffle, and then we dropped that thing. But that's the second thing that you do. You don't, for instance, require a system where you have people who are called SMS, and therefore a different determination of salaries, and then you have non-SMS, and therefore a different determination. The others is inflation. The others is the chamber. In the chamber, things are hot. If you don't agree with the unions, they fight you. They tell you, or knowing you're going to the streets. In CPI, it is the CPI that tells you, and then the state determines whether they're paying you just below the CPI or at par or above the CPI, what percentage. So it is stable. Now here you take just about 1 million public servants, and you say you are none SMS, and then you give them to unions to collaborate with and then fight for higher salaries. I'm not saying that, but in the country, you know that you, no one now is salary category number one. The whole salary. So you have matric, you cut grass, you do all sorts of things, you're a great job. And I'm not sure whether those people are under the bus. Our experience when we're calculating throughout the world, whether OPEC countries or any other category of countries that are rich and poor, even BRICS, even continents, all sides of it, proved in figures that South African public servants are not shortchanged. They are somewhere in the middle. They are not highly paid, but they are not in the lowest category. They are somewhere in the middle. So, while the country may not be doing well in the economy, and therefore inflation and so on and so on, but generally. So I'm saying that's the second thing. And the third thing is to professionalize. We haven't started a rigorous program of professionalizing public servants. So I will leave it at that. And then go to maybe the second sub-answer to say, when you employ people, there needs to be criteria, pre-employment criteria, and then employment criteria, and then post-employment criteria. So you say, for instance, before you're employed, have 1, 2, 3. And then you don't move around yourself and change that thing. When you say you will have to have code 8, you mustn't take a person who is still to get code 8. You say because you will get it.
Yeah.
That's not what you wrote here.
Yeah.
That's not what you wrote. So you need to make your mind up on your pre-entry. And so things have even been made better now on young people to say, let's not worry them too much because they don't have experience. And that was understandable. But it didn't shake the qualification side. Simply because you are young, you may as well not be qualified and then you get a job in public service. So don't shake, don't quiver, stand there. And then on the day when you employ, from interviews and so on, don't create under sort of flexibilities. All of a sudden, this person, because it's beautiful in the face, you take them. Because they are wearing, in terms of appearance, they look good, you employ them. Without getting to the content of their minds, even besides qualifications and experience, what is it that they have? What is it that they know that they have done successfully before? So that's very important. Let me leave. Let me go to enforcement. yes, there's a lot that needs to be said in terms of enforcement in public service. All the rules and regulations that you're saying. But we are with that. Public service does help the commission, they do help from time to time, but maybe they need to do more on the side of enforcement. But let me lastly talk about the crime and fraud strategy in the whole country. It's not as integrated as we should have done even now. That strategy, anti-crime and anti-corruption strategy. We have it, but it's got a number of weaknesses which would have needed to be strengthened and so on. One of the things that came out in court some time ago was that by not having an independent anti-crime, anti-fraud or anti-corruption agency along the lines of FBI and so on, we are misinterpreting or deliberately implementing something else other than what we should be doing in terms of what is this thing called, there's a judgment that came almost three times in court, wanting us to change from the current dispensation, where we have Hawks, we have NPA, we have the directorate, then we have fusion. We shouldn't be relying on fusion. We should be having it separate and distinctly well professionalized and resourced anti-crime strategy, where even a passing fly is caught, given the status of criminality in the country. So we haven't done that. We still have fusion, and you find that in the directorate itself, you have people who shouldn't be there. In Hawks, you have people who shouldn't be there, easily compromised. There's no country that would pride itself as fighting corruption and when it has people who are easily available for manipulation. And so on. So that's what I would say. So that's where we lose it. You have somebody who is carrying a burden, immediately employed someone. We ourselves have fallen victim to that. Somebody is employed somewhere in Northwest, in a municipality, getting paid, apply for a job with us, gets the job. Assume the judges have not removed themselves, that's it.
Yep.
Until after what? 2 or 3 months? Or longer?
After 6 months.
Then this thing is filed. No, but your drone salary is from two. That person was caught by us, not by any external. So that thing we should have an integrated system that immediately picks you up. Immediately you do such a thing, it reports. At the end, when we see your ID, everything, but you can do it if we have a single public service.
Yeah.
We don't have municipalities as if they are a country. The sphere of local government is not another country, as we pretend to implement. So in our heads, there's something like that. That it's another country, you may not touch it. And then therefore things fall between the fingers. And when we become victims and suspects ourselves, somebody laughs at us. Minister Mkhunu thinks that, or PG thinks, we're victims ourselves of the system that we should have done away with long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But we're very soft in dealing with things that our country needs, right from the National Assembly in some cases. Up to the executive. Well, very so. This outcome is called Glenista. Glenista case 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
It's very clear. Have a distinct and independent anti-crime and fraud. We don't have it. Why are we not implementing it? We have no reason. What is happening? Crime is increasing. And so on. I'll stop that, Jim. Thank you.
Did you want to answer this question? She seems to be too married to that question. This young, because I heard the minister was saying, yes, the intention of this war on leaks, and he was oversimplifying it. You want somebody to go and do away with leaks outside here tomorrow, and you put a salary to that particular responsibility. But when you appoint him, the first thing you do, you send him to university for 3 years. That leak will remain for 3 years, and the salary is paid for 3 years for the leak that is not done. Where is the sense there? I don't believe that when the President Zuma was announcing on the need to repair leaks, in his mind had the view that these people will start in the university. Because he would have seen the leaks yesterday and he wanted them to be finished tomorrow. And here we are, create a situation where this person, for him to do this leak that is leaking, he must go and sit at Stellenbosch University for 3 years and be paid the salary, and that water leak continues unabated, because you are still sending somebody to university to repair it. And then they come and said, no, I did work. Where? In university. I was not paid.
Even if they came from university for 4 years, if they were faced by a 100-year-old pipe, they won't do anything. Because there's no decree that we renew the rotten pipe. But the reason for all the leaks that are direct leaks is because of all pipes, infrastructure that is dilapidated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no university decree tells you to renew pipes via a new degree. We've done nothing better. So it's a problem.
The question she's asking is, did we deal with this issue? Just do away with it. No, we are not going to pay because we did not do. Simple for us to take, to confront it and close it.
No, Chair, we didn't just say we're not going to pay. So my understanding, we didn't hire any of the young people ourselves directly. They were hired through the EWCETA, a service provided, appointed by the EWCETA. Some of those things are still being closed off. We had a meeting the other day with the CEO of the EWCETA. As indicated by the CFO, they're currently trying to reach a settlement still with one of the service providers who was appointed. And one of the main reasons that they want to do that is because some of the trainees still don't have their training certificates, for example, from some of the training providers. So we're trying to make sure that these are closed in such a way that the whole program is closed off properly in such a way by the EWCETA that the young people who participated are harmed through the closing of the process. So my understanding is that payments that are due to the young people have been made now, but some of them are still have their certificates from their training outstanding, and we want that to be resolved.
Okay.
Maybe just one addition. That case externally is not closed. Fula Bubi did just tell me that the SIU is still waiting for a proclamation from the president to fully go into the matter. They did a preliminary investigation. They did some preliminary findings. They now want to go ahead. Then maybe we should remind the president to determine or to decide on that, because they're waiting. They have information. So when it's closed, it's not really closed to that extent.
Okay. Well, that's long, but closed, but not closed. Okay. No, thank you very much. I think we might have come to the end of the presentation. And as I'm saying, we have appreciated, Minister, the fact that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and that light must come nearer. I remember in some years, Mamioho, as I was still in Kosatu, we sent a member of parliament to parliament who was the general secretary of Kosatu, and he was given the ministry of RDP. In 2 years' time, he was dismissed by President Mandela. And when we asked President, how do you replace, how do you dismiss our DS man, Jay Naidu? And the president said, no, you see, comrades, this man, I gave him responsibility. When I want report, he says it is in the pipeline. I asked him again, where is the report? Where is the pipeline? Then the other day I asked him, break the pipe. Let me see this thing inside the pipe. He couldn't break the pipe, so I dismissed him. So the tendency of us consistently wanting to have work in progress is a problem, because that progress does not have good time frame. But that light at the end of the tunnel must come nearer the tunnel now. At the beginning rather than at the end. And that light must be bright. And the brightness is when you have got the department. At some point, Water Affairs was a good department where everybody was happy about Water Affairs. The Department for Water and Sanitation must come to that point. And the other day, said he was asking a wrong question to a wrong structure. Whether can we be sure that the team that is doing so well in Water Department will not be changed come 2014? But he was asking who, because somebody who's changing was not there. And the changes is in the outcome of the elections every month, every day, I think. So the voters must vote that way. And we wanted to take over from DA in Cape Town. Okay.
Ambitious.
We are now on item, the second item on the agenda, which is the briefing by the Department of Water and Sanitation on the Hammanskraal matter. The minister did say that they did not necessarily have a presentation on the matter. Please listen. He's going to speak to it. Make notes if you can, if you want to ask questions.
Thank you very much. We will run through very briefly the progress. We will come back to give a full comments, a full report once we have started. Well, just firstly, on the source of cholera, I must just emphasize that there was still under investigation. Various agencies and departments have done their investigation. Swanen, to start with, they've done their investigation. They say on the in the Temba reservoir that is owned by them and run by them, their results are negative in cholera. And then obviously on a rent water supply line Bahalis supply line, with all of which supply Hammanskraal. There's no cholera. Those two are provided for cleaners. But those are the first ones. So we're not sure whether Swan has done this properly and so on. Have spoken on cholera, and we also have said something. Now, what we are saying is that in the next few days, the team that has deputy ministers in water, in health, must lead a process of synthesis by everybody in the public who has done this, and who said they need to appoint CSIR and the Water Commission to really do the analysis and the synthesis and come up with something reliable to the public. On the other hand, also go to the private sector, those who have done some investigations, collate that, and then publicize that on their own without us. So they have to do that. So it's still open, and it has to come with DG must do those appointments and run with a kind of a little bit independent of us. Maybe I must fill up this gap by saying I think tomorrow we are releasing, DG hasn't quite confirmed, but tomorrow they are releasing the results, the preliminary results of the blue drop. I still confirm tomorrow, the preliminary blue drop.
Either tomorrow by the 31st.
Yeah, we're going to, yes, preliminary results. And then in July, final results. Immediately after the preliminary results, we will go public in media to give our analysis on the state of affairs, just the preliminary one, so that people don't misinterpret it. Some media houses, always when you publicize this, they think it comes from, they think it's some Samaritanian. Yeah, coming from somewhere, who says, hey, South African, your green drop is like this and this, here are the results. This is a deliberate exercise. They just dropped it some 5-6 years ago for some reason. Then we've resuscitated. Both green drop and blue drop. It's going to come. But I'm on Amas Grant. So on cholera, we want to stop there and say there isn't as yet any authentic results into the cause of cholera. But cholera has been found in water that is supplied to the people who are sick, and some of them who have actually lost their lives, they would have used water that is contaminated. But in Pare area, what AfriForum are doing is something odd. You can't go to a manhole, that's the Vaal River, and then you spill. That's not what people drink. They don't drink people from the river. They drink water from the tap. Even if it's water from the Vaal, but it has undergone cleaning and so on. But the one aspect is saying the existence of cholera in river, cholera elements, is there, and the possibility is on the side. What we should take issue about is water that delivers in homes via tap, whether that is the water. If they have gone to people in the surrounding area who are getting water from the tap, and they say that water is cholera, then we would understand and get water. But if they just go to raw water, it sounds taking a chance. And so let me leave cholera and pollution. We don't deny pollution of rivers, but after what we are up in arms with is what goes to people, what water goes through taps from water service authorities. We want that water guaranteed across. If we find fault, we demand. And Temba was closed because even though Temba is a wastewater water treatment plant, but water that came out there is not up to standard in terms of the SANS 241, which is an institution dealing with this cleanliness of water and so on. So let me leave there. So water is polluted. There are elements of cholera in Amas Grant, but we still are struggling with or investigating the causes of cholera. Now, we have, however, demanded that Tswane must test, regular tests of water, and the team is trying to make sure that Tswane does what they are expected to do, frequent checks on water currently that is supplied to people too. But people have been warned against drinking that water that they get from Temba, that you can wash and you can do other things, but don't drink that water, which is a thin line. You see, when you have water in front of you and a tap in front of you, the temptation to drink when you're thirsty is very high all the time. You say, ah, now let me drink this water, I won't die, only to swallow some of these elements. It's a problem. But we are looking at what has happened, the tragedy, big as it is, against just an assumption that there must be something that is the cause. maybe more than water, because it otherwise would have affected too many people in the particular area of supply by its own itself. But I'm not undermining the case. I'm just saying we are still cautious at the moment about coming out with this. So I hope that soon they will come out. But there are rumors and there are statements that people are making that no, because Tswane is now forced to use tankers to supply water, those people who are fetching tankers are not getting those tankers from Rand Water Supply Line, which is clean and guaranteed, or from Makhale Supply Line, which is clean. They are sending people to the river elsewhere. Mm. I came across that at the hall. People confronting us. They say some of the drivers are our relatives. They tell us they are told to go and fetch water there and there to avoid paying. Because if you go and if Tswane goes and gets water from Mahalis or from Redwater, they will have to pay. They pay for the debt. So and we don't know, some of the people they contract could be independent contractors. So they just go there and say, I filled up my tank, my money, I'm supplying. And only to find that water is water from the pond next door, which is full of it. That is the risk that we are trying to deal with currently in terms of the supply. Now, what is the source of the problem? Source of the problem is the Tswane infrastructure, particularly Rooivaara, which was flagged as far back as 2004, and then in 2007, and then department entered the fray around 2011, issued 6 directives after that or since then to say correct this, fix that. Around 2018, they tried to fix it. They put aside more than 290 million rand. They procured, and then they got a contractor to upgrade that system, that plant in particular, Rooivaara. It's a delicate plant because normally you have a water treatment plant up the stream. Like you would have Temba up the stream and then have Rooivaara down the stream. Here you have Rooivaara, which is a wastewater treatment plant, up the stream. And then it releases water to Apis River and then to the dam, and then from the dam to the water treatment plant, which is Temba, and then to people. It should have been the other way around. But you can have such a system anywhere in the world, but you must guarantee that effluent that comes out of your treatment plant, whether it is up or down, it is up to standard. Some of the water that comes out of wastewater treatment plants, you can drink it even before it goes to a water treatment plant as such and so on. So that's the problem, the Rooivaara, which has not been fixed, if you like, from 2004, and despite the interventions. When we came in 2021, we said to Mayor there, Mayor, let's collaborate because we want to take over water and so on because we see a risk. Let's ask Gauteng government to put you with Tswane under 139 to enable us to apply 63 because Section 63 needs to be implemented together with 139, and they didn't have 139, and we couldn't apply Section 63. But Mayor was very uncooperative. No meetings, no collaboration, but at the same time they continued to say they don't have capacity and so on to deal with that particular problem. But they thought they had, over years they would deal with that. I think when we met in Talaga Estate, he spoke about 2 years. To fix that was still 2021, and it's a problem that it has not been fixed. But let me leave the historical thing, because it's ugly, it has resulted into 23 people losing their lives as a result of, I think the mayor then looked at things
politically that I am Minister of Water and Sanitation, then I'm ANC, he's mayor, he's DA, and he thought I was interested in it. That. Those things are known, they are public. We didn't have to bring them into a system as delicate and sensitive as this. As a matter of fact, we are looking at amending that law. So the 63 goes straight, it doesn't get attached to 139. We'll look at that. Now, let me go to straight to what we are looking at the moment. On Wednesday, the 17th, we met Mayor here in Cape Town. They had a workshop, and here I was coming there to address them. It was a separate arrangement. There were many people in local government who are managers, experts, and so on. So they were requested to assist to go and brief them. So we went there to address them on water. So when he heard that, he asked that we meet before, and then we met, and he introduced this matter that he would like to meet us. He would like us to meet to discuss Rooibal, because it is above their capacity to deal with it. And I said, Mayor, this is a welcome change of attitude. I welcome it. In order for our meeting to be effective, let's ask officials to deal with it technically, to say what could be the solution, because I hear what you're saying. Not only to lack of capacity in Swahili refers to, among other things, capacity to run procurement, right internal. Just supply chain, they have a problem with it. It goes up to running a project of this nature, capacity to run a project like this. So that's why after paying that, after that, they procured that and appointed the contractor, and I think it started or something, it then fizzles out. Everything just ended on the street. And you don't hear what is it that they're doing. It's a matter that was going to go to say, so what follow-ups are you doing? 292 million, not 292 rand, 292 million disappeared on this. So we agreed with Mayor, and then after the 17th, at that time there was no progress of this. And then on the 19th, we heard from Gauteng that they are looking at people left who there, and it looks like cholera. And up until there were those full-blown cases, we then met. We cut short the period we wanted to allow for officials to meet because of the outbreak. Then we met. When we met, by the time we met, DG and team, including the Swahili officials, they crafted a document. They presented for us. We deliberated on that document after it was presented, and we agreed that it is not yet perfect, or is it a complete a kind of setup of things going forward that we're going to use to tackle the problem. But we agreed. Even the words agreed in principle. Because what it says is that allow Department of Water and Sanitation to come in into the issue of supply of water to, or Tswane supply water to Tswane, but in coming in, work with Tswane, which we always do when we intervene, and we call it intervention support to municipalities and so on. So that was agreed. So we're in now. Then having come in, we said the second, that's the first component, the political component. Then the second one is that the officials must continue, led by DG, to complete the package. In other words, they are bringing in different components. The political component they've brought in is in place now. What they need to bring in now is the model, craft the model of dealing with the problem. In other words, what model? Are we going to say Tswane go on with us in, or DWS go on fix the problem with Tswane in, or we're joined, or we're what, or we're appointed external? So they're dealing with it. That is what was not finalized, but it was there to say this is where we should go. The third component is finance, is funding. In other words, where are we going to get funding from for this kind of thing? It's a multi-year project that is needed there, quite big. It's more than 2.9 billion that I've seen them flighting, saying we need 250. They said they need 250 GG nation. It's more than that. They will come with the final figure as to what money do we need. So it's three components. There's the political component, is the model, and the implementation model, and then the funding model. Of course, there's time frame. Now, for this thing to be completed, we need the Department of Finance to talk to them. There's a meeting today between myself and the Minister of Finance, somewhere at 5. So we need that department on board so that we can put to them the kind of support that this project would require. But DG had a meeting today in the morning with officials in finance. They will then come together to brief us in that meeting to say this is what we have agreed on as officials between DWS and finance, which will then bring in Tswane. They have said they've budgeted, I think, about 450 million out of 250 billion that is required. But this thing is far away above that. So finance is similarly on board. DG will assure us or will brief us later. But they have already gone to a meeting this morning. We also need Department of Human Settlements to complete our package. We have had a preliminary chat with Minister of Human Settlement yesterday. She is agreeable in principle. She wants a certain mechanism. We have a meeting at 5. It's finance, human settlement, and ourselves at 5. And we'll finalize that now. Once we have them, it will mean we have human settlement on board nationally, we have finance nationally on board, we have ourselves, and then we will have Tswane. So that will complete the kind of political setup at the highest level that is required. And then the provincial government. Then once we complete all these components, which is this evening, and we're hoping that we'll finalize everything, well, Tswane is not going to be part of it. We may, in the morning, tomorrow, call a meeting between myself and the team, the whole team from DWS, and the whole team in Tswane, first thing in the morning, to allow DG then and team to then update us from the last meeting. By that time, we've met the finance, we've met treasury, we've met human settlement, and so on. So they will give us, and maybe we need to do that meeting virtually. We don't need to go back to a physical meeting because it's urgent. We are then envisaging a situation where we may go public again. We'll brief the media after the first meeting. We said we'll come back. We may then stay the morning, have a physical brief with the media to say from the time we briefed you, this is what has happened, we now have this thing finalized. Our intention though, as an outcome, required or desirable outcome. Means that having agreed, we will then say you have agreed if this and this and this and this department is on board. Then we say what will be the model of implementing this, a credible and sustainable model to deal with the particular problem once and for all from 2004 to 2023 now, in whatever joint effort and so on. We will also give an estimated time frame. We will also give sources of funding and so on. We're going to be public with this. So this is where I can put it. But to further take you to confidence, we could just indicate that over and above getting all this, we think that it is going to be either we'll look at the agencies. We have DPSA on one hand, we have Redwater on the other. We will finalize those things in our discussion as to which implementing agent will be much more effective and quicker on the matter, and we won't want to wait until everything is done. We will want the problem to be faced in so that people see that we're taking them seriously and all of that. But in the meantime, while we're working on finalizing everything once and for all, there has to be a credible interim measures to give them clean water that is currently. We'll still have a chat with DG and on that matter, because in my chat with people in Mahalis, they say, yeah, we can do this and that on a particular week. We do need to come clean on that, because if you say tankers, people are still quite worried and afraid because of what I'm saying is happening with tankers there and the allegations. Lastly, the SIU has become interested in the matter even before the outbreak of cholera. They have completed, according to credible sources, they have completed their preliminary investigation. They want the president to declare a formal and official investigation into the matter. We said if this is true, Tswane must welcome this. The first one to welcome this. We also will welcome it, and we are not going to waste time on Thursday. We will publicly welcome it if it's confirmed official, and we would want the president to issue a declaration so that there is certainty on the matter. So, Chair, I can put that I would just give you indulgence for DG to, on a separate matter which is not on the agenda, put one slide. DG, this president is calling a meeting. What's going to bring sustainability in the supply of water and sanitation to municipalities? I'm just doing this because I know it can take 5 minutes. It is on a slide. President is calling a meeting on Friday, this Friday, to say, among other departments, water and sanitation, come with what is limiting you or affecting you to look after water in South Africa, both in terms of sources, resource management, but also in terms of services management. You remember with this thing that we supply bulk water according to legislation, and then municipalities and water service authorities are the ones that supply through reticulation. But more and more, we now know even pipes in a number of municipalities, big and small, and we're all over. We're like, we don't have a stakeholder from local government, because even them, even ordinary people and mayors, just this morning driving here, the mayor was calling, we don't have water, we have a problem. So they are kind of declining. They have declined, actually. So this is what we'll be presenting to the president. But I would want you to just present the model that we will engage you about after that. But as far as Hammerskull is like that, well, come Thursday, we go public. So come tomorrow, we finalize. Thursday, we go public. And we then start working on all this problem while the investigations on the cholera is coming up and other issues. Thank you very much, if you allow me.
Without prejudice? Yes. Mr. Maybach, without prejudice?
Again?
Without prejudice, it is presented? Okay. Not that presenting? Oh, but I think the machine is not working.
Oh, okay. DG can just take you on board.
Yeah, it's better that way.
Very good.
It's better that way.
Thank you.
As my man gets, he's sad. He thinks, no more thing about that.
Chairperson, as you know, the department is working hard to support municipalities. The minister has been crisscrossing the country, meeting with the political leadership of the municipalities which are really struggling with water and sanitation services. And we've been focusing on allocating our RBIC and WITSIC grants in those municipalities, but we don't only do that. We're also providing management support, technical advice, in collaboration with our water boards in many of these municipalities. So we're helping them to develop implementation plans, improvement plans. And as we presented previously to the committee, there's long lists of municipalities in each province which we're supporting to try and address the water and sanitation situation in those municipalities. But we need to do that, and we need to continue to do that. But there are limitations to which we can address the decline in municipal water and sanitation services through that kind of support. One of the challenges that we keep repeatedly helping municipalities to fix their broken water and sanitation infrastructure by giving them money, and then the municipalities don't maintain it properly and operate it properly, and then we have to come back again with funding to fix it again. And that problem of the poor maintenance and operation by municipalities is not something which can be funded by us. It has to be funded from the sale of revenue by municipalities. Sorry, from the sale of water and from revenue raised by municipalities from the sale of water. We don't get money from Treasury for maintenance and operation of municipal water. The bottom line is that we need to have more fundamental reform in the water services sector so that we get municipalities to start managing the water and sanitation services sector. And when we try and ask the question what kind of reform is required and analyze what is the cause of the problem, we can see that many municipalities are on a vicious downward cycle of poor and declining services, reducing payments, poorly performing institutions with increasing debt and low investment. We've got figures, for example, for Etty Greeny, which provides evidence that their cash collection is going down, their operating cost coverage is going down, their capital investment is going down, and their services are declining. So we need to address all of these things if we're going to improve service delivery. And we need to have professionally managed, capable, and efficient, and financially viable institutions, which can increase investments, improve services, and then you get increasing payment when services are improving. But how do we get those professionally managed, capable, and efficient, financially viable services institutions? That's the key question. And we think the answer to that is to strengthen what the Water Services Act already says, that you have water services authorities and water services providers. And the main constitutional role of municipalities is the Water Services Authority role. And they're supposed to, in terms of the existing Water Services Act, ensure that the water service providers in their areas provide
services of a minimum, that meets minimum standards, but that is not happening. So in order for that to happen, we want to introduce legislative amendments to the Water Services Act, which we will need to take through the justice system and consult with stakeholders and other departments about, and take to cabinet and ask cabinet approval for gazetting for public comments before we then come back to parliament with them. But basically what we're suggesting that should happen is that in our role as the regulator of the sector, that we should amend the act so that water service providers have to have an operating license. And that operating license, they will have to apply for it, and they will get it if they have the necessary competence and capabilities to provide water and sanitation services. Honourable members, at the moment almost all water service providers are municipalities. When I use the term water service providers, I'm not talking about service providers in the normal term. In the way it's used in the Act, in the Water Services Act, a water service provider is a body which implements the function as opposed to the water services authority function. And at the moment, almost all municipalities are both water service authority and water service providers, and they've only recognized themselves as the only water service providers in their area, which wasn't the intention of the Water Services Act. So now municipalities that are water service providers and any other water service providers, including water boards, will have to apply for an operating license with this suggested reform. And the Act will also say that water services authorities can only recognize licensed water service providers to operate in their area. And if a water service provider doesn't meet the required norms and standards, then their operating license will be withdrawn. And then in extreme circumstances where the municipality refuses to appoint a licensed water service provider, the minister will be able to intervene in terms of a reworked Section 63 and enforce that the municipality appoints a licensed water service provider. So this is a high-level overview, Chairperson, of the proposed reforms. Obviously, they will have to implement them carefully. Municipalities will have to be given time to develop the capacity to meet the license conditions. License conditions for Jobo Water, for example, will be quite different to license conditions for a small municipality. But all of this detail will be worked out as we progress. Thank you.
Okay. No. Okay, there's the end already. I was to say that we really do need to get a commitment on the way forward, moving out of the crisis that we have, especially on the issue of the Roy Valve and the timber plant, in as far as what is going to be then the process moving forward and working on it. You have already said that. So I was to say that because it is not necessarily a written report and which we can hold you liable on, why don't you allow that you do all the meetings you're talking about, prepare us a report. We are having a meeting on Tuesday, the protocol meeting on Tuesday. Then you officially present a document that we can hold as a oversight mechanism to the work moving forward. I want to go that way, but without necessarily looking out the hands that were up before I come to this conclusion, Honorable Seki and Honorable Maybeck. But I'm simply saying the presentation as done now verbally, let it be consolidated into a report and be presented officially on the PC on Tuesday. We've got a virtual meeting on Tuesday. The sixth. Then we'll get that report and we can hold it, and then we will know what is it that you are expecting from both the minister and the city of Tshwane and the provincial government of Gauteng, of course, moving forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think just in that report,
if the department can just give us the summary of the interventions in the previous funds allocation. Because I think this morning the DG and the mayor were just AFM. The mayor confirmed that Upper River is the source of timber problems, which we have been saying for many years. And I remember there was an allocation, I think 3 years ago, at River capacity improvement. If that can be added, just a historical kind of an input. Okay, I think the minister has already talked about this thing of tapping from other Khalis and the like. Can that be said as, I don't know whether it's final, not today, but can it be said as one of the most possible, you know, interventions or not? Just to clarify, because the people of Tswanis really want to hear that. The issue of water tankers, I think comrades, we need to talk about this issue of water tankers openly. There's this general view that water tankers are the source of the problem sometimes, because if you close water tankers, you are closing business for them. So, okay, can we talk about that as well? Also, Minister, I'm not sure whether it's your office or Department of Health on possible claimants, legal claimants on the incident. We once invited from the community of
just a minute. We were asked that if we go beyond one, we need to have a 5 minute break scientifically. But I can see, I thought we were ending the meeting.
No, this is the last one.
No, but there still may be to talk.
Don't worry, Chair, I'll be very quick.
We once invited the community. I'm not sure whether how involved. You remember they were represented for a few or four in one way in the same joint Homeland Settlement. And whether in these, all these activities, is that committee part of the engagement? Because I think they had what I would call a research minister with that. I'm not saying these questions are or comments should be responded now. So.
No, I heard you were. You're saying at the time when on yes. Tuesday, it must cover that.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Maybeck?
Yeah, Chair, I'll be a lot briefer than I was intended. Just on the comments of the DG about proposed legislation to deal with the inefficiencies and inadequacies of municipalities, it sounds on the surface like but I'll reserve any further comments on that. But other than when do you propose to bring draft legislation, that's the earliest opportunity that we could get a review on that. So what's your plan for?
Yeah, no, wanting to preserve the right of the DA not to be taken over by us. Don't politic, we are in the committee. Yeah.
Excuse me,
Chair. I'm fine. Okay. And I'm sure, DG, you hear what the members are saying. In the report that you're going to give to us on Friday, please take care of this point. So when we leave after that meeting, we will have at least a document to can hold on to say, this is the work that our department is going to do in collaboration with the city of Tswane, with the other departments, and in addressing the bigger problem of the water treatment plants, in more especially in Tswane, your Royal and your Temba plan. Yeah, unless there's a comment you want to make, Minister, we can want to close the meeting.
Well, fine. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. The meeting stand adjourned. Oh, there are minutes. There are minutes. Thank you very much, department. You are released, and please do not eat our food. No, but I'm joking. You can have lunch. Let us go through the minutes very fast. And I'm not releasing you. I'm saying you can be released if you so wish. The minute of the when? Stop a minute.
Sure.
I propose that we have 2 minutes.
Is it
only
1 second?
There are 3 minutes. Hello. The minute of the 2nd of May is moved by Mr. Maybeth, seconded by Miyoko. And the one of the 4th is moved by Honorable Patterson and seconded by Sikwai. Oh, okay, say. Mrs. Peterson.
Minutes of the 4th, Chairperson.
Of the 4th.
Mm,
yes. And it's seconded by.
I propose the adoption. He is still seconded.
No, say it because it was the record.
Okay. Saturday, I propose for the adoption.
Yeah. The minutes of the 9th.
Now we are on the minutes of the 9th, Miyoko. Seki?
Second.
Actually, I must say.
I was still in a meeting.
Yes.
I love Mr. Seki. I was still in the meeting.
It is you, Seki, who stood up while the meeting is on. No, you said, we said we want this agenda, we want to adopt the minutes. The meeting is duly adjourned. Thank you very much.
I'm not going to